Five, four, three, two, one.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the first Finance Economic Resiliency Committee meeting of this new commission. I am absolutely honored to be joined by my esteemed colleagues and city staff. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair, as well. Honored to be serving with you all, and I think we've all been doing an incredible job for our community, the residents. Look forward to continuing that here at the Finance Committee. Thank you for the staff dedicating their time here. So let's get started. Commissioner Dominguez, I think we're going to kick off. Oh, Rick.
Yes, I just need to advise everyone that today's meeting of the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee has been scheduled in a hybrid format, with a quorum of the committee physically present and remaining members, staff, and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually via Zoom. In order to participate in today's meeting virtually, members of the public may dial 1-888-475-4499 toll-free and enter the webinar ID, which is 863-6059-5462 pound. Or log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 863-6059-5462. Any individual wishing to speak on an item must click the raised hand icon, and if they are using the Zoom app, or dial 9*9 if you are participating by phone.
Chair?
Yes.
I just have a few announcements. We have a few time certains to announce. Item number 4 on the Barclay is at 11 a.m. time certain. Item number 6 on the fee waiver at the convention center is at 12 p.m. time certain. Number 7 on Sister Cities is at 10:30 time certain. Number 10 on Homebase BTRs is also at 10:30 time certain. And the number 14 discussed the Miami Beach Music Festival is a 1 p.m. time certain. There are no deferrals. Thank you.
Excellent. So why don't we get started? Commissioner Dominguez, we would like to hear items 7 and 10. Why don't we have you kick off here?
Thank you so much. We can start with the Sister Cities item. And so this item passed on first reading with a referral to the Finance Department. And second reading will be at the next commission meeting. And it's basically for the city to run the Sister Cities program. We currently allocate $25,000 for this program. And in the transition back over, I've worked really closely with Raquel Williams and her team. And Raquel, if you could share some of the things that we've discussed and potential finances for consideration in 2025.
Sure. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Commissioners. Raquel Williams, Assistant City Manager. As Commissioner Dominguez stated, we have been collaborating with the Commissioner and with the existing Sister Cities Committee. At first reading, the item recommended that the Sister Cities program be facilitated with the support of the Office of the Mayor and City Commission. However, post first reading, the administration has been in discussions with the sponsor, and there is a desire to have the program, for purposes of longevity and continuity, for it to be managed and operated through the Economic Development Department under the city administration. So on December 13th, it was heard at first reading and referred here to finance. We anticipate that for second reading, that would be one of the primary changes to the ordinance, meaning the oversight and the staff support of the program. Based on city staff recollection of the resources needed for management and operation of the Sister Cities program when it was formerly with the mayor and commission's office, we recommend that in fiscal year 25, potentially at mid-year, in hopes of accommodating all of the economic development staffing needs for existing programs, in order to accommodate the Sister Cities program, we believe that as of right now in fiscal year 2024, it can be absorbed. But in fiscal year 2025, we would recommend a part-time position at mid-year to assist with not only Sister Cities, but with covering all of the economic development functions. In addition, the existing budget for the Sister Cities program is $25,000. The sister cities that we do have, there are about 11 of them. All of them have not been equally as active. Similarly, our city commission has not been fully engaged, and we believe that as the program continues to develop under the administration, we anticipate that there will be more activity, there will be more engagement, and there may be more costs. So we are recommending a $15,000 increase to the $25,000 budget for a total of $40,000 for fiscal year 2025.
Thank you. You covered it. Do any of my colleagues have anything to share?
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Raquel, thank you very much for bringing that down. I had the privilege of going to Cozumel a couple of weeks ago. My older daughter has been living in Mexico, and I just tied the trip onto a visit to her. I know that a lot of people think that the sister cities is a giant boondoggle and nothing more than a junket for people to get frequent flyer miles. It was established by President Eisenhower after World War II in an effort to build relationships among communities that might have something in common but be separated by half a planet. So it's a pretty lofty, aspirational goal. And I will tell you, I think that the program and the what it stands for and the opportunity it presents has been sorely mistreated in the last 10 years. We have a mayor who came in several administrations ago and was so unhappy with the fact that the predecessor, thank you so much, had been a big advocate for the program, that 50 years of Sister Cities documentation and memorabilia and records are missing in action. Nobody's been able to find them. The belief, very strong belief, is that they were discarded, not stored, but discarded, which is a whole different conversation, but leaves us in the situation of trying to recreate something and make a case for something without the supporting documentations. In this case, in the Cozumel case, people might think, well, Cozumel, what's the big deal? But Lucy Delgado, and who, I'm sorry, missed the commission meeting, but my colleague, Kristen Rosen Gonzalez, I'm sure, mentioned her a few times. Lucy Delgado is a powerhouse of a woman who happens to have 20 years plus of history of the sister cities in binders. And so we can recreate that. But what she was able to show us and what we witnessed together was the depth of this relationship, the history, the fact that we had entire delegations from the city of Miami Beach, including mayors and multiple commissioners, coming down, people from the business community, people from the hospitality community, to learn from cities and to share what we can offer to them. So Cozumel is a great example because it is a beach town that is dependent on tourism, 100% dependent on tourism, to make ends meet. It is a dive town, so it doesn't have the same party atmosphere that Cancun does, for instance. But when we were there, we were there for the 150th anniversary of the carnival, which is no mean feat and was a pretty awesome party for 3 days. The next morning, after each night of confetti being thrown and floats and people out carousing and having a great time, the streets were whistle clean. It was a family-oriented event. So there were people who were coming in to travel that were three or four generations of families. Their parents had taken them, so now they were there with their adult kids and their grandchildren. It's always surprising and something I believe in strongly and ran on, that when you look further afield than the Tri-County area, you can find all kinds of good things to learn and incorporate. And I am 1,000% supportive of doing what we need to do to reinstate this program in City Hall and give it the attention it deserves. Cozumel is one example. We have a delegation coming in from Japan. We have two cities in Brazil, a city in Portugal, a city in France, a city in Odessa. I think we have 13 sister cities in all. And if each one of them, if each exchange is as fruitful as this small trip to Cozumel, then we will be the better for it. It's a small investment for a huge benefit. And by the way, we are able to do things for and with the sister cities, cultural exchanges, student exchanges. We have equipment that no longer meets our needs, but could be fantastic for other cities in other parts of the world. So yes, yes, and more yes on this is my view.
I appreciate that, Commissioner. It sounds like an enlightening experience, and you're all going to bring back some tidbits to share with our city. Question for Raquel. So essentially the financial ask here is an increase of $15,000 for the annual budget going forward, and then also a part-time position within the Economic Development Department?
Yes, that is the financial
And Raquel, what do you have? You have open recs within the Economic Development Department you're looking to fill now?
We do currently have an Office Associate 5 position that is vacant that we're looking to fill, yes.
Okay, and what level would that be?
An Office Associate 5, I think our lowest level Office Associate is Office Associate 3 position.
Mm-hmm.
The 5 position is the highest of the Office Associate positions. Yes.
Okay, so what I would ask, I'm not saying no, we can't go out and hire part-time, but as we're filling that rec and responsibilities could shift within the Economic Development Department, I think, you know, one thing that we need to really start focusing on, especially from a financial aspect, is, you know, we look at our city budget approaching $1 billion and especially all the employees and manpower. To the extent that we're able to bring on somebody for a broader economic development role, and these responsibilities would be able to be rolled up within that position, I think that's the first opportunity that we should look to seize, whether it lie with that specific person or if some of the current employees, their plate becomes a little more free because of the new position that's hired, we should look to capitalize on that. It's not a showstopper, but I would just ask if you would keep an open mind on that.
We certainly will. We anticipate that the position that we're filling right now is for existing needs. We also anticipate that our department could absorb the Sister Cities program in its current state. What we do know, based on the work that we've been doing over the past couple of weeks and the level of interest and engagement, is that the Sister Cities program function is likely to surpass the current resource that we have and that we are planning for the current fiscal year and going forward, which is why the ask is for mid-year for part-time in fiscal year 2025. Okay. But we will certainly take a look at that, and we have. We think we can absorb it now, but if it were to become a more robust program, which we can see that it will be and we would want it to be as well, we will need additional resource. The administration would also have a work plan and deliverables and goals associated with the program so that we could measure productivity and have some accountability tied to the Sister Cities program. Again, this would potentially happen through the budget process for fiscal year 2025. We are likewise asking for an open mind as to that part-time position in mid-year, fiscal year 25.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor? Mr. Mayor. Mr. Chair.
Commissioner.
Thank you. I love the idea of Sister Cities. I think it's a wonderful program, having at one point been the liaison to the Sister Cities program when I worked in Mayor Bauer's office. So I absolutely love this program. I commend my colleague for working on bringing it back to City Hall. It is typically and traditionally a function of the governmental entity, not of the Chamber of Commerce. Notwithstanding that, you know, I want to extend appreciation to the Chamber of Commerce for a number of years having taken up this responsibility at the request of the city. And that's something that we have to be grateful of. I have a little bit of pause when I'm told that, you know, that that we're going to create another position, in part because of this. My aide, you know, in addition to dealing with all the legislation we deal with and with all the phone calls that we get and all the text messages from constituents and all the emails that we get from people and the workload that we have, she also liaises for two committees, not one, but two committees. And that means dealing with, you know, a committee of 21 people in the Commission for Women, of about 7 people on the LGBTQ Advisory Committee, with no added extra compensation, and it's extra work that she has voluntarily taken up. And you know, I don't thank Monica enough for the incredible work that she does day in and day out. But I'm really so grateful to my aide.
Yay, Monica.
But having said that, you know, I can't say create another position when my office is overworked. And so I do not support today at all supporting any conversation about creating any extra positions when I've been asking for a long time for more staff in my office so that we can better serve the needs of the residents and the taxpayers of the city of Miami Beach who elect us to respond to their needs. And perhaps we could have this conversation about the additional position for the Sister Cities program together with the conversation also of additional staff for the offices of the mayor and commission who also liaise to several boards and committees.
And Commissioner, thank you for those comments. I think that's kind of initially without seeing a full-blown analysis of the roles, responsibilities, and time commitments that this position would essentially entail. I think that's where I'm landing. My aide is amazing as well. Lewis, I'll volunteer some of your time to help with the Sister Cities program. We didn't talk about that prior, but I think we'll all be happy to do that. This is an all-hands-on-deck effort, unless we come back and say, you know what, this position is going to have an ironclad 15, 20 hours per week. I'm hesitant adding a recurring additional staff with taxpayer money for something that we don't have a defined estimate or timeline. Now, to the extent that this role grows and moves past, we expand the Sister Cities program and it moves past being able to efficiently allocate the roles and responsibilities with the resources we have. That's a conversation that we can certainly entertain and discuss. I'd be happy if we move forward with the increased budgetary requirement, but adding a, whether it be even part-time specified staff for this, I'm a bit hesitant today. Yeah, please.
I agree with both of you. In the past, you have a committee, and those members of the committee each represent a city. So somebody like Lucy Delgado, for example, with Cozumel, not only organizes the trip to Cozumel, but if somebody from Cozumel comes, takes on the responsibility of that city. So I think the idea here is to have a liaison and to have a budget, but the committee members are empowered, and they do work. They reach out to the chamber. They reach out to all of our different governmental entities, and they make it happen. So I think the idea is to just get a liaison and have the committee members do the work, which is why they are appointed to the sister cities in the first place. But that begs a different question, because now that we've brought it back, is it a committee, because it's a committee of our residents, is it a committee that we each appoint somebody to, or is it, as it was before, is it a mayor's committee and he appoints all of the members? So that is, I think that's very important, too.
Yeah,
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, please.
To appoint two people, you know?
Right. So the intent is to have each committee member, each commissioner appoint a committee member. And the discussion for today is to increase the budget by $15,000 for 2024. The extra staff, that's something for our retreats. That's not something up for discussion today. Okay. We can discuss it during our budget retreats in May, June, July. But what's on the discussion for today is the increase in budget for 2024 and the committee itself.
Okay. So, Commissioner, would you like to make a motion to move forward? And before you do that, I'll just say if there's other staff out there that's sitting here watching this, whether it be in the Economic Development Department or other areas of the city, we have 2,600 employees. If you are ambitious and say, you know what, that seems like a really, really cool initiative to get involved in, I have some extra room on my plate, I encourage you to, those are the types of proactive measures that we want to see from our staff.
Wait, can I say one more thing? Because we're in sunshine right now, so I can mention it. Absolutely, I'm on board for the increase in budget, and I'm so happy that it's coming back and you have my support. And actually, I'd like to be a co-sponsor on that item if I'm not already. I would like to co-sponsor it. I think it should be two. We each appoint two members, and let me explain why. Because there's four. How many cities do we have? 12?
So we.
You want to make sure that there's at least a representation for one person to be the point person on each city. So that, for example, one person, you know, represent, and that way, because if each person represents a couple cities, unless you wanted each person on the committee to represent, you know, two cities, but that might be a lot of work.
Mr. Chair. So, yeah, I think that's a great idea if the body feels that having two appointees works two appointees would work best. I would also like to ensure that the chamber gets a seat at the table, because while they managed it for the last 3 years, they took on the responsibility. They didn't ask for it. It was handed to them, and they did a great job. We're here now because we all feel that it's better to have it on the city side, but I am grateful to the chamber, and I would like for them to be involved.
So that would make 15 members, because we're doing this on second reading, right? We can't change anything now. I guess we can amend it.
Through the chair, Commissioner Dominguez, I recall that in our Sunshine meeting that Commissioner Bott also participated in, that there was discussion of potential participation by a few commissioners to participate in the initial years on the committee. Just for the edification of everyone, there are about 6 members of the committee right now that are currently active and engaged. And so recruitment of those additional members would potentially take some time to get all the members together that are being contemplated at this time. But I did want to remind you of that discussion where 2 commissioners may be a part of the committee.
Yeah, let's move on. We can talk about the composition.
Okay. Well, I just want to put a suggestion, because I believe we have 10 sister cities, and perhaps, we're 6 commissioners. So maybe the commission, each commissioner appoints one. In the past, the mayor used to do all the appointments. So instead of the mayor doing all the appointments, the mayor does 4, so that it's people appointed by the mayor and commission who liaise with each one of the cities, and then have, as the sponsor of the item, Commissioner Dominguez suggested, have a representative from the Chamber of Commerce, which would bring the number of members up to 11, so that we have an odd, so that it's not an even number body. So that's just for consideration.
Let's stick with the financial aspects here, right? We could talk about the composition and other matters. Madam Commissioner, I think you have interest in maybe moving this forward with the $15,000 budget enhancement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do.
And if I may, we do have 13 sister cities. Confirming.
Oh, it's 13?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I have somebody with a hand up. I'm not sure if you're taking any comment. It's Daniel Gerardo from the Miami Design Preservation League.
On this item?
His hand is raised.
Okay. Let's keep it concise, because I think we're moving on here, but absent some compelling reason why we wouldn't move on, let's wrap these comments up quick.
So we're going to allow him to speak? Did you say?
Yes.
Okay. PJ, or like.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioners. Daniel Serrato with the Miami Design Preservation League. Just wanted to offer that, we would love to be a part of the process. I know just when I started as a volunteer back when Matty Bauer was mayor, we weren't included in any sister cities. It wasn't until Gelber was in office, I think, for the first time we got an invite to an event. And when I was there, folks were asking, why aren't there visits to the Art Deco District, the Art Deco Museum, the walking tours? And I just say now, with all this going on in Tallahassee, I really hope we could include us in the other arts and culture groups that really helped define the city. So looking forward to this new era for sister cities, and thanks for all that you're doing.
Thank you. Commissioner Dominguez, I believe you've made a motion. Do we have a second on
I'll
that?
I'll second it.
Chair, if I may, I'm sorry, Rick will chime in here. The commissioner isn't a member of the committee. The motion should be made by the committee. If I could help to summarize, facilitate, my role is it appears that the committee may be recommending this return to commission with on a positive affirmation of bringing the sister cities in-house and endorsing to make this a budget priority during the 25 budget process to increase the allocation to $40,000.
Yes, that is correct.
I'll make that motion.
Do we have a second?
Yes.
Commissioner Fernandez? Okay, let's call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to item 10. Let's try and get through, because we have a 11 a.m. time certain. Commissioner Dominguez, want to tee this up?
Yes. In a recent meeting that I had with the finance department, Manny Marquez and I were going through BTRs, and I felt that the home-based businesses weren't accurately being reflected, and the BTRs deserved a a refresh. The categories are not what in today's modern world reflect. And in subsequent conversations that I've had with many, and we've talked about the BTRs, currently the state has stuff that could eliminate BTRs and all of that altogether. So we may need to move this to a later date, but I'll let Manny explain.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, Commissioners, Administration. This item was referred December 13th, and the initial referral was to review home-based business fees and conduct an informal survey of what other municipalities were charging. We currently have 139 home-based businesses, which generate $53,000 in revenues for our general fund. They supplement the general fund for paying for police, fire, code, other general fund activities. And so we looked at what other municipalities charge. I had two of my team members, Sasha Gonzalez and Esther Guerrero. They did an awesome job reaching out to municipalities. We got back information from the City of Miami, City of Coral Gables, City of Hialeah, Town of Surfside, City of Sunny Isles, City of North Bay Village, and City of Miami Springs. And there's a table in your memo, and there's also a graph. And I think the graph paints a better picture.
Manny, just quickly, what do we charge versus what would be the consensus or average?
We are, amongst the city surveyed, we were the highest. We charge an average home-based business $372 versus City of Coral Gables, $228. City of Miami, $135.
And that was the next highest, Coral Gables?
Next highest was Coral Gables.
So even if we went there, I'm just looking at the quick financial impact. If we went from 372 to 228, we're collecting revenues of $53,000. The revenues that we would collect if the BTRs remained exactly the same would be about $35,000 to $37,000, minimal impact. And I think this would be something where we certainly don't want to stand out as being the most cost prohibitive BTR issuer in the state. Commissioner Bott.
So I, you know, the world has changed. I don't know when, Manny, I don't know if you know when the schedule was put together originally, but the world has certainly changed since 2020. More people have home offices, home businesses. So that, you know, we want to make this a welcoming city for all kinds of business. My concern is a little bit tangential to this, which is the number of businesses operating out of homes that aren't accounted for. For instance, I lived on Parkview Island, and two doors down from me were running an illegal jet ski operation. And when code came to see why they had seven jet skis tied up, they were told, oh, we actually work with the City of Miami Beach. We store them when they get towed for being illegal operators, which was, I give them full marks for creativity. But that is, you know, an egregious example of a home-based business that isn't accounted for. In cleaning this up, so in addition to, you know, possibly modifying so that we're in line with Coral Gables at least, and looking at what the categories are to see if there are things that are now obsolete or things that we're not capturing at all, how do we enhance the compliance of the requirement for people to be paying their fair share of their taxes? Is there already something in the works or some process, or is it reliant on, hi, I'm starting my own business, I'm coming to you to pay a BTR?
That's pretty much on the honor system. Businesses coming, home-based businesses coming forward. We had a jump in home-based businesses applying during COVID because they wanted financial help from the federal government grants. So that's, we had a big, big spike. Before that, the number was very low. I think it's on the honor system. We could research, Google or somehow try to research SunBiz addresses. We rely heavily on code. There are hammer on the streets, per se, to find businesses that are operating without a business tax receipt.
I think it is not an unwarranted thing. We're not trying to be onerous or punitive. I would venture to guess that most people have no clue that they need to have a home-based business tax receipt and go through the process. So, when you do a Google Maps search for dry cleaners or whatever, you see all kinds of local businesses pop up in all kinds of unexpected places. So I think it might be an educational outreach. Hey, we see you're operating a business. We're thrilled. We're here to support you as the City of Miami Beach. As part of being a business owner and operator in the City of Miami Beach, the first step is filing your BTR, and this is how you do it. And, you know, here's 6 months or 3 months or whatever to comply.
We do that already. We go knocking on doors and giving out flyers with packages, our website information, advising businesses if they don't have a BTR. That you need to go to BTR.
Manny, my unofficial goal to you, we're going to cut these BTR fees perhaps by 38%. Let's see if we can keep that revenue that we get in, $53,000, consistent. We do that by expanding the net. So, you know, this is not going to be part of your official, you know, goals and responsibilities for the year, but it would be really cool if you came back next year and said we cut our BTR fees by 38%, but the amount of revenue we generated remained consistent because we widened our net. Commissioner, I'll leave this in your court. If you want to essentially defer this or keep this to the equivalent.
No, we'll keep it. I'm very happy if you make that motion. And I give my commitment that I will work with Manny and the finance team on the categories and bring it back sometime in the future with an update.
Okay. So, Rick, what is the process for this? Open and continued?
We use the to register retain. So if the request is to be retained, you could either assign a specific meeting for it to come back, or you know, at the sponsor's direction along with staff. So if you have a specific month, or if you just want to say to be retained and return it at an appropriate time based on. But we could leave it up to the sponsor.
May is good, I think.
Okay, so we'll bring it back in May.
Perfect.
Okay, we'll show that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Manny. We have an 11 a.m. time certain. Are all teams for to hear the Barkley here and present and ready? All right, let's get to this. Rick, do you need to tee this up in any way? Okay.
Good morning again, Honorable Chair and Commissioners. Raquel Williams, Assistant City Manager. The item before you today reflects not only an update of the current request for proposal process related to the Barkley Plaza Apartments, but also a summary of the property's history. The city has undertaken three RFPs in the recent past. We currently have a developer, Legacy, who has come forward and proposed a redevelopment of the site. The commission on September 13, 2023, directed the administration to not only have further discussions with the developer, but also with the housing authority to determine if the property should potentially be conveyed to the housing authority and or redeveloped by Legacy. We have had discussions with Legacy, about nine to date. We have had fewer with the housing authority. We were notified on January 30th that the housing authority would be potentially working with Legacy toward its redevelopment of the site. We are looking today for policy direction as to the RFP process. We have not officially been directed to negotiate, as the RFP is still under the cone of silence and has not yet been awarded. The Legacy proposal contemplates 71 new residential units, 46 of those units being affordable and workforce housing, 25 units at market rate. The project would also consist of some commercial space on the ground floor, as well as some parking. At a prior commission meeting, there was discussion of a potential opportunity for the city to redevelop the site on its own, and we did explore that in the memorandum before you. We, again, are looking for some policy direction and are awaiting the next step in this process.
I appreciate that, Assistant City Manager. Where I'm coming from and following this over the years, what I think from a commission standpoint, we need to really prioritize and say what exactly is our goal with this property here, because I think where we've kind of gone astray is trying to be all things to all people. We are focusing on trying to get the best economic deal return to the city. We are trying to provide the most amount of affordable housing to the city. We are trying to retain a historical building. So I think we need to essentially put our priorities in order. If the priority is to provide the most amount of affordable housing on the site, that's going to dictate the direction we want to give the staff for the RFP. If the priority is to essentially beautify the historic building that's there in place. That is going to give them different direction, and that will dictate the amount of financials that we get back. If our goal is to maximize the revenue that we're getting back from the city, then that is going to essentially push the RFP in a different direction as well. How do we want to proceed here? I know we all have thoughts on this. Commissioner Rosen, Vice Chair Rosen Gonzalez, do you want to give your kind of latest and greatest of your thoughts on where you stand?
So, look, if we were to take this property right now and put it on the MLS, we could probably generate anywhere between $7 and $10 million in a quick sale and buy properties that are move-in ready and probably own anywhere between 15 to 25 units if we wanted to. Or we could work with Mr. Peoples, who's offering $343,000 entry plus $50,000 a month.
A year.
A year rent, which I think is... I don't know what the body wants to do. I worked with the administration. We came up with a way that we could actually keep it and apply for funding and own it. They worked very hard to come up with all sorts of different loans. Raquel worked with Alba and Marcella, and they really took a long time because I challenged them. I said, we need to renovate this. We got an exorbitant number, just like those security cameras the other day that came in at 20 grand a camera. That's how I feel like the appraisal came in at a bizarre number, lower than I think it should be. And at the same time, the renovation came in at somewhere between two or three times what the renovation cost would probably be. That said, the city has a pathway to ownership if you guys want. How much do I have left in me to fight these things? I watched us purchase the property for $7 million. Okay, I watched us lay out $7 million. So if we think that paying $7 million is, we buy $7 million and we sell at $343,000, if you guys think that that's smart financially, then I'll go with it. Am I going to take this on as my own personal battle? No, I even told Don Peebles Jr. that I'm tired of the battle. So if this is something that you guys would like to give to him, and you believe in him, this is a tremendous economic opportunity that that Donahue Peebles Jr. the third is going to get. We're giving you a property next to the convention center. And if that's what this body wants to do, then, it would be interesting to see. I mean, there's pathways. You put it on the MLS, we'll get several million we can reinvest and buy housing that's already ready. You give it to Donahue Peebles Jr. You have the option also of the city staff, which came up, worked very hard to show you guys how they can come up with the funds. Federal funds. By the way, we can issue a revenue bond at the same time, and this revenue bond that we would issue would cover the accounting costs. So, it is what it is.
And how I see this, I don't see this as a fight or mutually exclusive or we're not giving things away. The city is actually retaining the land, so we will always retain this asset. Essentially, what they are going to deliver is a product for very needed workforce, affordable, and in my opinion, market-rate housing. At the Neighborhood and Public Safety Committee meeting that we just had earlier this week, I was actually shocked. I wasn't expecting this. I didn't ask for it. Last year, there were 800 police calls to that site. Mm-hmm. 800 police calls. So from my perspective, my number one priority is activating that site as quickly and efficiently as possible. I'll ask what I believe to be a rhetorical question, but if we're concerned about the rent that we're getting back, that $300,000 and $50,000 per year, Donahue, if we would say, go build all market rate or knock this structure down and build market rate, would that enhance the economics that the city is getting back?
Commissioner, first of all, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm Donahue Peebles III. I'm the founder and chairman of Legacy Real Estate Development. Without a doubt, the answer is yes. Removing the affordability restrictions would allow us to pay more. and commensurately increasing the affordability restrictions would limit our ability to pay ground rent.
Right. Simple economics. So that's why I ask this body to consider what is our top priority here. I want to get my colleagues' input. Commissioner Fernandez, if you wanted to share your thoughts.
Sure. And thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, the nuance to details is so important in everything that we do. It's important because it's how sometimes, even though we may have good arguments, unless we are truly nuanced in those details, our arguments lose credibility. And it's sad when good fights are being fought and details are lost. I agree with my colleague. Opening any conversation at $344,000 is an insult to the residents and to the taxpayers that own this property. Whether it's for a lease or for a sale, it's not a sale. It's a lease. But still, even when the taxpayers continue to own the property, saying that we're giving up this property for, what is it, Mr. Attorney, 99 years that we would be giving it up for?
Correct.
That 99 years. I mean, we still own the land, and that's great. I mean, it's an asset that we have, and I'm sure it's great for our bonding capacity and all that we still have this very valuable asset. But to say that we're going to go to the table and sit down and enter into negotiations because we got this offer that says that the initial rent is going to be $344,000, and then that annually we're going to get $50,000 annually. I mean, imagine $50,000 annually. That's about $4,000, a little bit more than $4,000 a month for prime commercial real estate across from the Miami Beach Convention Center. How do I look to the residents of the city of Miami Beach in the eyes and tell them that I can authorize any sort of negotiation with this? I can't. We wouldn't be good fiduciaries of the taxpayers' assets by doing that. And so I think we all share in the common goal that we want to see more workforce and affordable housing, most certainly. But we can't say that this opens the door to any negotiation, not with my vote.
And I'm going to turn over to my colleague, but Raquel, have we done data-driven analysis for exactly what type of housing would be needed in that area? We seem to be centered here on we need this to be X percent affordable. We need this to be X percent workforce. It feels as if we're throwing around terms just because they sound good. Have we done a data-driven analysis to say this is actually the true lack and need? Where are the numbers that say, here's the amount of market rate, this is what they're going for, here is the amount of workforce, and that's why we need this project to be workforce? Because essentially where we're coming from is we're getting lower returns back to the city because we are essentially saying, well, we need X percentage of workforce housing. In fact, that is part of the economics that we're getting back to the city, right? Because when we constrain the amount that this developer or any other developer is able to charge, which essentially is what workforce housing is, it limits the amount of money they're able to collect in rent, then that essentially limits the amount of money that we get back to a city.
We all get
that. Yeah. Well, I'm saying part of we can't just look at this in dollars and cents about what we're getting back, because one of the things that we're getting back is what we're asking for, and that is the delivery of a workforce and affordable housing project. So to the extent that we say, you know what, maybe market rate is there, then that enhances the returns that we get back as a city. Let me turn it over to some of my other colleagues for their thoughts.
So 800 police calls, you said? Do we have a ballpark? I don't know if anybody's here from the police department, but what does that cost the city, roughly?
I'm not sure of what that cost is.
So I understand, you know, there are conflicting concerns here. The fiduciary responsibility for the city, the taxpayers, the numbers look tiny on paper. On the other hand, we have been sitting staring at a derelict, vacant, problematic piece of property across from one of the biggest destinations in our city. It's not a fancy destination, but the convention center has how many hundreds of thousands of people passing through? And one of the things they see is this formerly beautiful building that is boarded up, fenced up, derelict in every possible sense of the word. It's a valid question to do data-driven analysis about what is the right mix of workforce versus affordable versus market rate units in that property. We know we have a use for all of them in our city. I also, with all due respect, can't take seriously these starting numbers, but we haven't sat down to negotiate with the Legacy Corporation, with Donahue, who has a vested interest in making this be a great deal for everybody, if you have any hope of doing something like this again in the city. I want it to be clear that we need to separate this organization from other developer organizations that might have had projects before us in years prior that we didn't think so favorably about. This, to me, seems like a good project. The question is, how do we make the numbers work better than they work now on paper prior to negotiating? So is it that we reconfigure the ratio of what gets put into that space? Is it that we turn it over to completely to workforce housing? Because the other side of being good fiduciaries to our taxpayers is, do we really want to go out and find money and have to pay debt service on money to do something, to provide something that we could get provided for us at no cost to the city and at some profit to the city? Obviously more than, you know, 50 grand a year would be good. But my point is, we're not developers. We're not builders. And we are going to have to go out to find funding. We're going to have to go find somebody who would be willing to build a project here. We're delaying future positive growth on this site where the entire neighborhood is begging us to do something. And I think all of that has to be taken into account when we discuss our fiduciary responsibilities to our residents and to future growth and to people who come here for business and say, wow, I could live in that apartment building right there. Maybe I should rethink about having my business opportunity in Des Moines, and maybe I should think about moving here. So I want us to, I hear you loud and clear, and I respect the concerns that have been voiced so far, but I do want us to factor all of these pieces in, because I think they are equally meritorious of weight. And highest best use isn't always just the dollars and cents.
And Rick, if I could, before I turn over to Commissioner Suarez, this is just saying go out and negotiate an RFP, right? When that comes back, we would still have to then approve the dollars and cents and everything that's in the RFP contract?
That is correct. If the commission gives a direction that staff should negotiate, staff would negotiate a return to commission with the key deal terms for the commission to approve the deal.
May I clarify? I believe that if the Finance Committee were to recommend to the commission and the commission would authorize the negotiations, the financial terms of the deal would come back to the Finance Committee prior to presentation to the commission. Just seeking clarification.
And I think the direction that you're hearing from us, we would actually maybe like a menu of options, right? Go out with this mix and say this is what return is coming back from the city. Don't spend years on it, but go back and say if this was 80% market rate and 20% workforce housing, this is what the city would then get back. And then we can sit there and see the numbers in front of us and see which direction we want to move forward with. So by no means is this locking us into any type of number or economics that we're getting back from the city. Commissioner Suarez.
Thank you for recognizing, Mr. Chairman. Hi, Don. I want to echo what Commissioner Bott said. You know, we have a building there that's just derelict for, 10, 15 years? And it's sad. It's right in front of our convention center. It's a blight. And I'd like to come up with something today, possibly. I'd like to come up with a deal. I mean, I also agree with Commissioner Fernandez that, you know, $300,000 down and then $50,000 a year is like really nothing compared to what that property is worth, in my opinion. Raquel, what did the city pay for this property?
So we have utilized RDA funds to the tune of between $5 and $6 million. I think someone mentioned the value of the property. It was appraised at $9 million in 2022.
So we paid $5 or $6 million. Can you?
We have utilized some RDA funding to acquire the property.
And how much exactly was that?
One moment.
5.6. Okay. Through the chair. Don, I think the sentiment is we just don't feel like we're getting a good deal. Okay. I think you would have a much easier hill to climb if you can pay off that $5.6 million. You know, maybe it doesn't have to be in a one lump sum. Maybe over the course of 5 years. I don't want to see it after 99 years. I mean, you know, everyone we know is not going to be alive. But, you know, what is the appetite from Legacy to say, all right, you know, we're gonna pay this, what the city paid off or paid for over a certain period, a very short period of time, and also get our annual rent?
Absolutely. First of all, it's a great question, and there certainly is appetite there. If the directive from the Finance Committee and from the elected officials is to go back and get to a $5.6 million number.
Well, let's just talk about it now.
That's incredible. I mean, that's doable.
Yeah, you've got...
We would need to...
Six commissioners here.
Through the chair, I would respectfully ask that if the recommendation is to award and negotiate, that the City Commission have the opportunity to direct the administration to conduct those negotiations in a proper manner with professional staff, such that it's not a negotiation process at a committee meeting.
Point of information. Once you're done, David.
Yeah, sure. Well, look, no offense, Raquel, but I guess the city's negotiation landed us where we are, where we're thinking that this is a ridiculous offer. So... pardon me, I don't have faith in this particular project for negotiation. I mean, I just asked a simple question if he's okay with paying off the $5.6 million, and he said, yeah. And so, Ricardo, are we allowed to...
Well, I want to make one thing clear. The city has not yet negotiated. So what's on the table now is the offer that has been made. The city has made suggestions. You know, you might want to consider this or that, but the city has not engaged in negotiations at this time.
So where I'm getting at, Don, is I think we all want this property to be developed, right? Mm-hmm. And we certainly want there to be workforce housing and affordable housing for, especially right in front of the convention center and in Collins Park. And look, you took the time to bid on it. No one else came back. And... You know, I don't feel comfortable making you jump through more hoops. But at the same time, I think we can make a better deal where it makes sense for everyone and assuage, you know, some of my colleagues' concern that we're not getting the best deal for the property. So, I mean, again, what is your appetite on that?
First of all, I can say unequivocally that a $5.6 million upfront payment for the 99-year ground lease is possible, provided that we are able to maximize density on the site and reduce the affordable requirement to 20%.
Show us as one of the options what that looks like.
Yeah.
So we're not locking in, but we're saying if maximum economic return is what we're looking for, show us what that project looks like.
And Mr. Chair, I was on the queue to speak.
Yeah, please.
And so going along with the point made by my colleague, you know, I think what we're talking about here is what is the starting point for negotiation, which is what my colleague, Commissioner Suarez, is saying. And from there, the administration is going to take it from there. Because I know for me, as a starting point, that would be a much better position for a starting point. Also, for me, a much better position for a starting point, in addition to what Commissioner Suarez mentioned, is, you know, similar to what a respondent did over at Pier Park, a public safety enhancement for that area, that we see such an increased amount of crime, such an increased amount of vagrancy, of public safety issues, that even children are exposed to things they shouldn't be exposed to at Collins Park. It would be great to see as a starting point in the negotiation as well, you know, maybe a police substation in there, or the funding of a police position, so that we can help address some of the challenges that this property will face itself once it's once it's developed. And that's something I would want to put out there. And now something that was important to me back when we approved this RFP, the issuance of this RFP in 2022, was for me what was always very important is that it not just be housing, but it be good economics for the city. I will not agree to a 99-year lease that at its face initiates with an initial payment of $344,000. You can't even buy a condominium in Miami Beach for $344,000. You can't rent anything in Miami Beach for $4,000 monthly either. So that's why in the language of the RFP, we included not limited to residential apartments, but also other appropriate zoning. And we said, listen, if you want to have a tech hub there, if you want to have office space there, if you want to have other uses, and I think the one thing that we said was non-transient uses. That was the one thing that we said. We don't want to see short-term rental there. We don't want to see more hotel there. We want to see non-transient uses there. And perhaps one of the things you may want to look at, because I believe you can still amend what you sent to the city, is maybe you have some sort of other component there, you know, a tech hub, an office use that helps improve the numbers back to the taxpayers who own this property. And so I just wanted to put that on the record because that was important when we were crafting this language.
Yeah. Commissioner Bott.
So, I love that we are all really engaged and hands-on commissioners, for better and for worse in some cases, but I think that it offers very robust conversation. But with all due respect to the process, and I have also felt frustrations at things that have been negotiated over the years, but I think there is a very clear direction that we want this to happen. And let me go back. I've been frustrated by negotiations over the years, understanding that it's a tremendous amount of work with a lot of competing forces. So I don't want to undercut anybody who's doing, you know, what they've been directed to do. Be that as may, that's in the past. Going forward on this project, there is a distinct, strong need, not just desire, but need to do something with this project. I don't think horse trading in this venue at this time is the appropriate way to do it. I think you've heard enough, I would imagine, about what the parameters will be, what we're looking for, that there is flexibility. Nobody has even started the negotiations. I don't know if it's appropriate or if it's ever done where commissioners can be a part of the negotiations or, you know, get briefed along the way so that it's not, here it is, this is the done deal that's negotiated. I don't know. But I do know that sitting here horse trading is not the way to do it. So I would respectfully, when everybody's said their piece, respectfully make a motion to let the city start the process so that you can come back to us with a palette, a menu of options. If we develop this project, this is what it will return to us. If we develop this project, you will get this amount of housing but less in dollars. So if we develop this, we're going to need more height. I don't know. We don't want to make it into a monstrosity. We want to keep it in scale. We want to definitely preserve and highlight the gorgeous building that is sitting there neglected. So come back to us. Come back to us with a few options that you heard loud and clear what people are looking for. You're good at this. Show us how good you can be.
Commissioner Gonzalez, Rosalyn Gonzalez.
I believe there was someone on Zoom, and then I'd like to hear what the public has to say, and then I'd like to weigh in also.
Wayne Roberts is on Zoom.
Wayne, good morning. Happy Friday.
Hey, happy Friday to you as well, sir. I love the interaction between you guys. It's so much fun, much better than this new world that we live in with this commission. And I know we missed Tanya yesterday. I hope she's whatever it was making her absent in a family emergency turned out well. I love her, and my heart is with her. I just want to make some points, because this is a new administration, this is a new commission, that things got out of hand for the last 10 years. And what got out of hand was all these crazy horse deals. And it made developers lower their price because they have to go through all these hoops and whistles and modifications. And instead of doing the legwork that's necessary to make the outcome successful for the city and the developer and the residents. And so, like 99-year leases, that's a new thing. We either sell a property, we don't sell a property, right? Like, and we do the work where we don't get false narrative evaluations of the property, 9 million, 5.8. I don't know what the property is really worth, but the prior deals, the evaluations that we got were off 50%, and we knew it. And we gotta work with real facts, where the developers trust us that we're not stupid and that we don't delay them years, and that the data is correct, and that we look at all the options up front in an effective way. One option would be for the city to maintain that property and build it out with federal and state funding. I haven't seen a report on what that would look like. Neither has this commission. I haven't seen and we shouldn't be offering a 99-year lease. We should say, and by the way, that 99-year lease only has like 25 or 30 years where they're required to have reduced rents. After that, they can build higher and redevelop it and build just market rate for the rest of the years. So we got to get rid of the fallacies. We got to get rid of the stupidity of these mantras that are propaganda. It's not real. And we need to do the legwork. The administration needs to do the legwork effectively. What is it cost if the city did it in real dollars after funding by the state and feds and counties? What is that cost? Is it anything? If we make whatever their rates are, 20%, 40%, 50% low-income housing and the rest market rates, what is our cost? And if we want to own it, we want to be in that business. If we don't want to be in that business, make it simple so we don't get one developer making an offer, that we get five because it's simplified, that it's real, yeah. And it's and we don't play games anymore.
Thank you.
And all I hear is games.
Yeah, thank you for that, Wayne. Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez.
Here's what I would say. We want to get the most that we possibly can from this property, right? In terms of housing, what we can do, preservation. It's already designated, right? So whoever buys it has to renovate it. I would do a dual. My suggestion would be a dual track. Let's put it on the MLS for 90 days at $15 million and see what happens. Let's get an appraisal. Let's put it on the MLS at its real value. And at the same time, let's negotiate with Legacy. And then at the end of, or 60 days, we put it on the MLS 60 days. What's our current, what's the current appraised value that we have? Because I don't even trust our appraisal. I'd like to get a new appraisal.
9.1 as of December 2022.
Right. Let's put it on the market for $10 million. Listen, see what we get, okay? Put it on the MLS for $10 million and also negotiate with Don Jr. And whatever comes back, if we get an offer, okay, we'll come back in 30 days. Maybe we get an offer for $8 million. By the way, we can buy eight small buildings, okay, for $8 million across North Beach and probably end up with, like, you know, 16 to 20 units that we own. There's no 99-year lease. I mean, all I'm saying is that I want to get the best deal. I want to get the best bang for our buck. And so let's put him in, you know, let's go to the open market, is what I'm saying. That way we either do a clean sell and we get like a windfall of cash. And by the way, it doesn't cost us anything to list it on the MLS. It costs you $0.
So let me ask this question.
Yeah. Let's do a listing. Let's have Don also come back. Maybe you come back with something that is so great that is better than whatever we get in real dollars. But I think that as fiduciaries, okay, and especially Commissioner Magazine, somebody like you who understands finance, you would understand that, you know, selling an asset, purchasing an asset for $7 million, and I understand that there's an economic quantification of building this type of housing. But, I mean, why not? There's no reason why we shouldn't at this juncture.
And one of the benefits that we get back is the historic renovation of this. Donahue, I'll ask you, because you're an expert in this, and I'd like to stay in my own lane. The valuation in your, you know, back of the envelope understanding, if that was an open lot, open and empty lot with no building on it, would the value be higher or lower than selling with that historically contributing building?
economically, the value would be higher without the historically contributing building. Now, obviously, there's subjective components to historic preservation that value of a neighborhood. But from a dollars and cents standpoint, the ability to develop the most efficient building and the most dense building corresponds directly with a lack of restrictions. And from an architectural standpoint, preservation of a historic structure is a restriction.
Yeah, and it's my understanding the Housing Authority is going to be involved here. So actually that's one of the benefits that maintaining the ownership of this land gets is we actually get some say in this. We actually get to see what the mix of that workforce and affordable housing is going to be. If we want to maximize our returns like we would on the MLS, let's see one of those options. Where I'm leaning, what I would like is essentially three different menu options that we would see here, one being the current mix of a large percentage of workforce and affordable housing with sprinkled in market rate. That it was $5.6 million we purchased it for, Raquel?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to see what the project would look like if we essentially, within a short amount of time, as Commissioner Suarez represent, if we would receive half of that back and then get incremental cash flow each year. And then I'd like to see what type of project it would look like if we recovered that $5.6 million over, let's call it, 5 years as well. Another thing that I would also like to see included is a termination option, possibly at 30 years and 60 years. How much it would cost the city of Miami Beach to come in and say, Legacy, we're actually buying you out. We are going to buy back this asset at year 30 and year 60. So, yes, it's a 99-year lease, but we would actually retain a huge degree of flexibility of what we'd be able to do with that property. Commissioner Fernandez.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And what I'm inclined to support something like that because the city ends up owning the property. I can't support, you know, the parallel path that my colleague just proposed of, you know, putting on the MLS and selling it to someone, and then we don't know what ends up being the destiny of this historic site. I think the site, the city got a good deal on it. We should buy and we should own and we should hold assets like this for as long as we can. But what I would like to see is everything you've just mentioned, including the participation of the Housing Authority in this, and the option for, as you mentioned, for the city to be able to buy out the lease maybe at a 30-year point or at some point where financially it would make sense. I would like to see these different options come back to the Finance Committee before we send a recommendation back to the City Commission. That would approve any sort of ability for the city to start negotiating, because I want to make sure that we start at a really strong point to the taxpayer, at a really strong, the best possible position for the taxpayer be our starting point. And so I would feel comfortable supporting your motion for as long as this still stays in committee for now.
Yeah, and Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, I think over the years I've really seen what is near and dear to your heart, that's maintaining city assets. And I think this gives us the flexibility to look at the different things that come back to us and say, what is important to us? Is it getting the most amount of workforce and affordable housing there? Then here's the option, here's the economics with it. Or if it's getting the best deal back while we're still maintaining ownership, that's going to be one of the options that we have there.
Yeah. But it has to be clear, one of the bigger challenges that we have in this site is not just the issue of this site, but in general, in this neighborhood, we have a public safety issue with vagrancy that we could start addressing with this agreement, because this property is going to be dealing with the issues of crime, of drugs, of homelessness that we deal with there already. And be great, in addition to the 5.6 that Commissioner Suarez mentioned, is that we start, you know, at a point where we also are maybe doing some sort of enhancement to a public safety position for this area as part of whatever comes back to us for consideration.
Commissioner Bob.
Yeah, so to your point, it is a troubled corner of our little paradise. But the sooner we get this inhabited, and whether by residents or businesses or both, the sooner that starts to go away. To have this big, glossy, newly refurbished, beautiful historic property with people going in and out, with kids going to school, people bring their groceries and walking their dogs, and businesses on the ground floor, whatever the vision ends up being, is going to go a long way above and beyond any additional proffering of supporting police or a substation or any of that stuff. So the sooner this happens, the better. And Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, you and I have been fighting a lot of the same battles for a long time, as I was a baby activist when I first met you. So I hear you loud and clear. And believe me, my ears perked up when you said, we could buy 8 buildings in North Beach. Yeah. I'm like, wait a minute, let's change that conversation. But at the end of the day, we just bought a property in North Beach to land bank, my new favorite term, because it is the right thing to do for the city. And when we had a different city manager, one of the things he inculcated in all of us who were involved was buy land. Mm-hmm. Do not sell land. And it is, you know, the more land we own, the more control we have over what goes on that land. So I've been hearing from residents like, are you crazy? You just bought a house in North Beach for the city? I'm like, no, we just prevented a skyscraper from possibly going up on the ocean, right? So let's keep the land that we got at a pretty good price with a beautiful building on it that needs some TLC, and let us put it to you, Mr. Peebles, to come back with a menu of options to this committee. Make us want to do all 3 options. You know how to do this. You're really good at this. Dazzle us. And with that, I will, unless anybody has any comments, I would make the motion.
Second.
Okay, then. Come back here,
Mr.
though.
Mr. Chair, we have a couple of hands. I don't know if you have enough time to...
Let's do a minute each.
Okay, we have Mr. Matthew Gotanoff.
Matthew, happy Friday. Hi. Go ahead.
Thank you as well, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing public comment during the Finance Committee. I'm Matthew Galtanoff, and just want to be clear, I'm speaking on my own behalf in my personal capacity. One thing that I didn't hear enough, perhaps, is that we keep forgetting this will build dozens of much-needed housing in this city. And whatever can be done to do that as quickly as possible, as Commissioner Bott has mentioned, will make this not a vacant building, but one that's full of life and activity and will contribute to the community. So, you know, if you look at how much it would cost the city to construct these versus how much it would cost a private developer. If a private developer builds these units, the cost to the city is zero. If the city builds it, it could be $20 or $30 million. I hope we all don't lose, or you all don't lose sight of the dozens of new units that could come online at some point in the future. Thank you, Mr. Gopanov.
And we also have Mr. Mojic Kagan.
Moj, go ahead. Happy Friday.
Hi. Thank you all for the opportunity to speak. I am also speaking on my personal behalf as a resident of Miami Beach and a longtime advocate for keeping our assets and generating the best use possible. I encourage us to continue working with Legacy. I encourage us to continue keeping the Housing Authority involved to the greatest extent possible. Our Commissioner David Greff is there with our executive staff from the Housing Authority. And, you know, thank you for considering doing the best thing possible for the owners of this asset, who are the residents of Miami Beach, as well as, you know, getting the best use.
Thank you so much, Moj.
Thank you.
Ricky, anybody else?
That's all for now.
Okay, and I will say, echo, you know, we're beating a dead horse, but expediency is of the utmost priority, and I went back, I watched the Finance Committee from a year and a half ago in preparation for some of these things. And we were all involved in the process of, it took, 3 years to move concrete barriers on Lincoln Road to simple flower pots. There are some things the government does well. Still learning them. I kid. But some things that the private sector does better. And redeveloping a workforce, affordable and market rate, historical structure for housing, I think is something the private sector, in tandem with our Housing Authority, probably is going to do more efficiently at return to our taxpayers than we will do as ourselves as a government.
Chair?
Yes.
If I can, I think there was a motion. If I could summarize the and facilitate for even the comments, this is what I have as the notes. It would be a recommendation to commission to authorize the administration to begin negotiations with the RFP bidder on the proposed.
No, it's coming back over here.
Right. I believe the motion is to ask Mr. Peebles to return with several options that will dazzle this committee, and then the committee will send its recommendation to the commission.
So there's not to, for the administration to negotiate at all with the developer? Because the commission would have to give that authorization.
I think you know what we're looking for. And so...
Then I withdraw my second.
But then once we get that menu back, that's when the negotiations start. That's where we say, this is the option we want to go to. Administration, go and fine-tune. So essentially we're looking for the three options, what that general premise would be, and then we send it to the administration if we want
to
say...
Commission.
It would
authorize.
Go to the commission as a recommendation of this committee, and the commission would then authorize potentially the negotiation process.
So if I can, then it's not a recommendation of the commission. It's direction to the bidder to return here with a menu of options. And the options I had written here was the current proposal, a proposal to return $2.8 million, which is 50%, $2.8 million over a short term, proposal to return $5.6 million over approximately a 5-year term, and of those options, what a termination for convenience option at the 30-year and 60-year would cost on all three of those proposals.
Well, I don't think we wanted to limit it to. I don't think we wanted to dictate what the proposals are. I think we had a very robust conversation about what we're looking for, things that are of concern to us, limitation, termination clauses, configuration to maximize return for you so that you can give the city better financial offerings, what the mix is going to be, and not proscribe from this conversation what those three proposals are.
If I may, through the chair, I would recommend that as well, so that we're not leaving other things on the table. We don't want to focus on certain deal points and then lose sight of other deal points that could have an overall impact that isn't as favorable to the city.
So,
and this is just a starting point.
Use those as loose guidelines.
So come back at the next meeting. Continue this item to the next meeting so that Mr. Peebles and Legacy as a respondent can come back with a new menu of options to dazzle the Finance Committee, so that then hopefully we can make a recommendation to the City Commission directing the City Administration to start negotiations.
Let's put it on the next meeting. Donahue, if that is not feasible, let us know in the interim. But I hate the slow-turning wheels of government, so let's not let this get lost in the abyss. If 20 days from now you need more time and we need to defer it another month, let's do so, but let's keep it front and center.
Absolutely. We can certainly get this done in a matter of weeks. We're excited about the opportunity and certainly understand the myriad of directions that we want to proceed with. I think from my perspective, and I'd like to make sure that I'm clear, we're to engage with city staff not in a negotiation capacity, but instead in an effort to further refine our initial proposal, to come back to the City Commission or the Finance Committee in order to then be authorized to negotiate again with city staff.
I just want to ask the city attorney, to me, the respondent engaging with city staff is synonymous with negotiation. I think the respondent, and correct me if I'm wrong, shouldn't the respondent be preparing an update to their response based on the feedback that they've received here before they start engaging with our staff?
I would suggest that it could be helpful for the proposer to get some at least initial feedback from city staff. It's not essential if this committee doesn't want that to happen. But I think that it could help the process because you all did not address every single issue that is included in their proposal. And so city staff may be able to guide, certain areas without negotiating actively. But,
What's the line between that and negotiating?
You can provide input and the developer could take the input or not.
Yeah, I Commissioner Fernandez, I share that concern a little bit. And Mr. Peebles, my thought was you would come back with several different versions of what could go into that spot, as opposed to here's my best final offer, right? So if we're going to change the mix and we're going to make it more market rate housing and less affordable and workforce, this is the thing. If we're going to increase the business tenants that we could put into the space, here's what it looks like. If we're going to, like I said, you've heard everything that we're looking for here. So I don't think it's coming back with a a best option. It's these are the three directions we could proceed with. Mm-hmm. Come back to this group. We would say, you know what, this looks like it makes the most sense based on the numbers and the vision for what would go in that space. Then we would authorize to the, go to the commission to recommend authorizing, negotiating that vision.
Mm-hmm. If I may, through the chair, I know we've spoken a lot about expediency, right? This has been a long process. We submitted the RFP 13 months ago now. We're excited to move forward. We're extraordinarily malleable with respect to every proposed alternative, whether it's market and affordable with a preponderance of market rate units, or whether it's affordable and market with a preponderance of affordable units, whether it's a tall building or a short one. We can navigate that and the economic consequences. What I'd ask is that the fetters with respect to discussion between all of us here be lifted through the authorization to negotiate, because this is an incredibly nuanced and bespoke process. And without the ability to walk through the finer details of each proposal and how certain decisions impact other second and third order conditions, we're not at a place where we feel as though we can move most expediently. Without the authorization to negotiate, we are extending the timeline by nature. And the Finance Committee would be able to receive many iterations and have subsequent discussions with respect to our incremental proposals as we navigate through the negotiation process. This is by no means a short process, but it's one where each incremental step requires sustained oversight from this governing body.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Just to be clear, the commission would need to authorize negotiations and thereby lift the cone of silence, which I think is what Mr. Peebles is alluding to. This committee cannot take that action.
So would this work, Rick, if we would essentially authorize the quote-unquote negotiation of the RFP? But what that essentially means is that the developer is going to come back to us in 30 or perhaps 60 days with a menu of options. And then we essentially give finer direction, and that's when the administration really starts ironing out the nuances.
President? You can't. You have to throw out this RFP. He already responded with a certain amount. You have to put out a new RFP at this point. You don't?
They can. No,
they are.
So negotiate with him, but you're giving him this project right now without really knowing what you're getting, because really we're rejecting the 343. We're saying no, no, no. But come back.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to make a motion 20%. For deferral, to defer this item to next month to allow the respondent to come back with terms that Commissioner Suarez has mentioned, things that Commissioner Bott has mentioned, things I've mentioned, things. We want to see something more attractive. I am not giving my vote to this today unless the taxpayers are properly given a fair initial rent payment. And an annual guarantee that is fair to the value of this property, that we see what the other options are. I think we do a disservice to the negotiations that we're going to ask our staff to make if we allow any negotiation to be recommended to the City Commission today. Let's see these better options. We've discussed it all. I think Mr. Peebles is an incredibly astute and wise businessman, and he's heard resoundingly clear from 6/7 of the City Commission that's present here today where our position is. I mean, that is some pretty great feedback. Let me ask you, Mr. Attorney, what type of guidance does staff provide to a respondent while solicitation is still on the street?
What we've done, because I've participated in those discussions, is we've reviewed their proposals with them. We've asked questions where there are inconsistencies, perhaps on square footages, like, you know, caught errors on occasion, made suggestions, but
any discussion, I would limit it to something like that. Very limited to something like that, to the same type of discussion that would occur while a solicitation is still on the street and they're preparing their response, because that's in essence what this is. They're just updating their response. Anything other than that, I wouldn't support.
Ms. Williams, I don't know if you wanted to make a comment. It looks like you have some thoughts.
Well, I think that we're taking the feedback that we're hearing as well from the dais, and we understand the direction to the developer. Note that in order for staff to properly evaluate what is being proposed by the developer, and in order to provide you with a memorandum with some level of analysis, there are questions that we may need to ask the developer. There are considerations that we would pose to the developer to ensure that the proposal that is being brought before you and the memorandum before you is inclusive of the administration's analysis.
And I think if it's limited to that, I'm open to that.
Yeah. Okay, so why don't we move forward in that? I will say, Donahue, if I had you as on my team, I'd finally be able to beat my 7-year on Scrabble. Those were some impressive verbiage you threw out there. Jason, do you want to summarize what we're moving forward with?
If I can, so there is no going to commission to recommend negotiating a contract. This is just basically the item is being retained till next month, and the developer is to return to sharpen his pencil and to on the existing proposal plus any additional options he recommends. But there would be no interaction really at a substantive level with staff.
It'd be more so advisory.
And I believe also to include the buyback options at 30 and 60 years for the various proposals.
I believe that you don't want to put any caveats.
We don't want to put in any prerequisites, but I think you've heard from me that that's something that I'd be looking for. To Tanya's point, we're not going to force you into a square peg into a round hole, but I think you've heard what is important to us up here and the different options that we'd like to see.
And this is to return in March unless the proposer would reach out. And I believe Vice Chair Rose Gonzalez is the sponsor on this item, so I guess it would go through the sponsor to approve a deferral if still needed.
I don't think I'm the sponsor anymore.
The sponsor on the original item from commission.
The original item?
Yeah.
Do we need a sponsor?
So if I withdraw it, it all goes away?
You're the sponsor. I'll leave that to the attorney.
Okay. I would like to withdraw. I withdraw my item. I want to start a new RFP. I want to go out. I want to give you the opportunity to really win this the right way. Now I'm at 343.
Oh. I would like to withdraw my item then. I would like the whole thing to go away. I would like to do a new RFP. And with this new RFP that we put out. Oh, here he is. To tell me no. I knew it. Let's hear it.
I will just say we just heard last week we got 800 calls from the police for this area. We need to move forward.
Okay, but this is my item, Commissioner Magazine, and I am getting rid of my item. I'm withdrawing it. You guys can go ahead and move forward with Donahue Peoples Jr. in a different way for a different RFP. Come back and redo it again. It's over.
Oh. You come back.
No.
Come back with something better.
I get the news sponsor.
I believe that if another member wishes to make a
I'd
motion,
I'd like to co-sponsor.
It would be a switch.
We would need a motion by another member other than yourself to proceed along the lines previously discussed.
I'll second.
You're
it.
Not on the committee.
I'll make the motion to switch the sponsorship of the item to Chair Magazine.
That's fine.
Wait,
is that
that's,
kosher?
You made the motion.
To switch the sponsorship of the item to the chair.
I think it just the item would become an orphan and yes. Could be picked up by anyone.
It's not an orphan, and from what the way that I understood this, we either have to accept or reject this RFP and then send it out all over again. That was the direction that we were told. You either have to accept the RFP or reject the RFP. What is on the table right now is not acceptable to Commissioner Fernandez. It is not acceptable to me. And if we had to take a vote right now at this very moment, you have to vote on the $343,000. You either have to accept that or you have to reject that.
Point of order. I made a motion for deferral to next month. And that takes
okay, so just
that
defer it to next month. It's not my item anymore.
Hold on. Point of order. All right.
Either have to reject or accept.
May I offer some
that's how it goes.
May I offer some clarification? There is essentially a dual referral on this item. So item C4E from the September 13, 2023 meeting of the City Commission was from or sponsored by Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez. The administration put an item on the agenda for September 13, 2023 that discussed this RFP. Now, in the discussion, the commission referred to finance the update on the RFP and asking the administration to have additional discussions. The item was heard at the same time as Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez's item referring this to finance. So there are two items that came before the commission that were referred here to the finance committee, one sponsored by Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez. The other was presented by the administration, and the commission voted to send it here.
I have a question through the chair.
Yes.
Okay, so Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez sponsored item C4E at the September 2023 City Commission meeting about doing a conveyance to the Miami Beach Housing Authority for this property. And then the discussions were held. And then at the same meeting, that September meeting, the administration had an item that was really an item from facilities management and from procurement on this. And that is an item that any commission can pick up and sponsor as well. So, Commissioner, Mr. Chair, for as much as you wanted to pick up an item to sponsor, you could probably assume sponsorship of the item that that the city administration referred in September 2023, which is a facilities and procurement item that spoke specifically about the redevelopment of the Barclays.
And both of those referrals are attached to the agenda item before you.
Yeah, okay.
Today, you either have to – isn't it true? Is it – I would like to understand. We are supposed to vote on the proposal that we were given. This is what we got in negotiation. We went from 300 to 343. Well, yes, they did.
No,
they spent this past 60 days.
We have not. The city has not been authorized to enter into negotiations with the Legacy Corporation.
Real estate development.
Real estate development. So this is not the offer we are accepting. What is being asked of us is, do we want to recommend to the commission to start negotiations with this developer? We will not accept. I'm telling you right now, I'm not accepting. You know, I would love you to dazzle all of us, but if you come back with 343 and 50 grand a year, no dazzling will be happening. So we will not be – I won't be accepting. I don't think Alex will.
Nope.
You certainly won't, Kristen. Sorry, I'm not using your proper titles. But, you know, nobody's
like
going to accept that. So we're not accepting this offer. The worst-case scenario that could come out of this is that we say, as the Finance Committee, to our one colleague who isn't here, that we would like to authorize – we recommend that the commission votes to authorize that the city starts negotiating with Legacy Real Estate Development Corporation to do something with this property, which is an abject neglect. That's what we're voting on. We're not accepting this deal.
Right.
At worst, we're recommending to enter into negotiations. At best, we're doing something a little bit different, which has gotten a little bit complicated.
Tanya, thank you for that nuance and detail, because it is so important. This is how things go awry, because we don't look at the details. We just look at, oh, we're giving away a piece of property. We haven't negotiated anything. We haven't done anything. It's like, and so you just like laid out step by step the nuance and the detail that is so important that has been the greatest frustration that gets lost in our conversations. I just want to thank you.
I want to move forward here. So I'm going to reiterate, 800 police calls there last year. 800 police calls. I saw a video of city staff go out there, and a next-door neighbor came by and said, please do something here. There was a dead body found in this building before.
Mm-hmm.
Enough with the ripping up RFPs and playing games. We need to move forward. Because it is a dereliction of duty if we do not do anything further. So, Mr. City Attorney, please tell me what needs to happen for us to provide the possibility for this one applicant. 177 people looked at this RFP and one applicant. So if I were him, I'd run out of this room. So we're lucky that he's not, because if he doesn't, we are back to ground zero, and this will sit here for another 16 years. So please tell me what needs to happen exactly today procedurally to give him the ability to come back with a menu of three or four different things next month to say, here are the options that the city commission can essentially move forward with.
Well, Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez has withdrawn her item, but there is an administration item which is still pending. So if Commissioner Alex Fernandez wishes to defer to the following meeting, I believe that that is appropriate if he has the support.
So I had the motion to defer for the next meeting so that Mr. Peebles and Legacy can come back with their updated proposals, in plural, that will dazzle us and for whatever ministerial and clarification purposes be able to have very limited conversations with the city administration so that then at the next meeting we can go ahead and decide whether or not to make a motion of recommendation for negotiations at that time to the city commission.
And I would second that.
Can I just ask one thing? Have we given him parameters, like a minimum down payment of 10% of the value of purchase price? I know you said the 5 point. Okay. All right. So then come back next month, and hopefully it's something we can all get behind.
And dazzle is the word of the day. Sharpen that pencil to a very fine point. No splinters, just lead. Get to work. Dazzle us.
I think you have the name of the building.
We'll make it happen.
Splinters. Dazzle. Okay. Let's move on.
So do we have a unanimous?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for all of your help. Let's move on. Ms. Perez, we made a monumental decision at the last city commission meeting. I'm trying to find it here, what number that is. But let's hear the Altos del Mar Park.
Number 15. Chair.
50. Yes. Oh. Yes, let's hear item number 15. Mr. Larkin, Ms. Perez? Actually, I'm not sure if they have any. Okay, just hear spectators. Mr. CFO or Mr. City Attorney, if you wanted to tee this up, but I think since we made a monumental decision that we wanted to expand our land banking, thanks to my colleague, Commissioner Mbott, expand Altos del Mar Park, something that my colleague, Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, had been adamantly fighting for to not only maintain but grow our city park land. And at the last commission meeting, we essentially made the recommendation to purchase Ms. Perez's property for $6.5 million. It's my understanding now that we're going to talk about and determine where that source of funding is going to come from.
Thank you, Chair. I'd ask the city attorney to tee it off as he's part of dealing with the ministerial legal parts, and then I'll handle talk about the funding.
So what we have now is a draft purchase and sale agreement for the property at 7605 Collins Avenue, owned by Betsy and Rudy Perez. The purchase price is $6.5 million. We've received a draft HUD, which shows a total estimated closing cost of about another $22,000 to $23,000. We can also anticipate spending several hundred up to $1,000 on an inspection and about $1,000 or less on a survey. Today, this committee needs to recommend to the commission to proceed if that's what this committee wishes to do. And our CFO is going to provide you all some options as to the funding sources for this possible purchase. I did want to actually make a clarification that there is a park there that the purchase may or may not be determined to be park land, but it would be continue at least for the time being.
Got it. So, Mr. CFO, do we actually have to determine the source of funding today, or can we essentially expedite this and just give you the green light to move forward?
We would need to determine the source of funding, and what would happen is this would go back to commission as a resolution to authorize the purchase with said funding source with an associated capital budget amendment so we could appropriate.
I understand this is a legislative policy decision. What would be your recommendation?
Sure. Let me walk you through, and I've listed in the item a few different potential funding sources. We reviewed that. Just one note before we get started to note that this acquisition is not currently in the city's five-year $1.1 billion capital program, so it did present a little bit of a challenge to the administration. So let me walk you through some of the potential funding sources. The first one would be what we call the PAYGO Capital Fund. Back in November, as we closed out our fiscal year 2023, the commission approved to roll approximately $8 million of general fund surplus into that fund. So there is the funds available in that. But to note, the PAYGO Fund, which is the primary source of funding for the city's capital programs that are not related to, like, say, an enterprise fund or such, only generates about $4 million a year. And we had
– geez, I think we've all talked about this in our briefings, not to cut you off. Okay. Do you have a recommendation of where this should come from?
Very quick. So we, the general fund reserves an option. Parking fund we spoke about.
But
and
do you
the
have
building
a recommendation of those four where this should come from?
I think in speaking to several members of the committee, there seemed to be a happy medium related to the option of the building fund. The building fund does currently have
there, if I could, is there anybody that would adamantly disagree with that?
I completely agree with it.
Colleagues?
I just want to have the opportunity to explain for a quick second why I think it's really important to do it that way, not any of the other ways, which are doable, but some are easier or not as easy. But I think the building fund gives us a unique opportunity to create out of the existing structure or some renovation thereof a hub in North Beach, which is under a lot of pressure from developers with a lot of residents needing a lot of assistance to have an outpost of City Hall there so that if you have a building permitting issue, a code issue, we have resources in the neighborhood where it is going to be effectuated. We have a situation where it takes 45 minutes on an average day to get from North Beach to City Hall. We have people who are greatly affected by these issues of building and permits and code and all these things that don't even know really where City Hall is because they're just starting this out for the first time. We have a CRA office up there. We currently already have a small building and permits department outpost in North Beach for which we are paying rent. So this centralizes a little hub in a beautiful park setting so that we're protecting the space, we're making it more our city offerings more accessible to the residents and the businesses who need a little more TLC to catch up with the rest of the city.
Amazing.
And I think it's
very supportive, very succinct, and I couldn't agree more. Do you want to make a motion?
I make that motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. Perfect.
I love Tanya.
Thank you.
Great. Okay. In order, I think we were going to hear item 9, and then we have time certain for number 6, and then we will piggyback that with additional education talk 5. So just for those looking at home, let's hear item 9, and then we'll go 6 and 5, unless any of my colleagues had anything immediately pressing they were looking to hear. Yeah. Okay, so let's go 9, 6, 5. Ms. Beltran.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair and Commissioners. Monica Beltran, Parking Director. So this item, I hope that many of you received an email yesterday with further information that was requested by Commissioner Suarez. If not, I do have some hard copies. This was presented in, I'm going to say, two parts. The first part was the consideration of going back to parking decals as opposed to what we have currently, which is entirely virtual system. And if that wouldn't work, I believe, if I'm wrong, please correct me, Commissioner. If not, also to possibly have a dual system. I think the memo stated what our concerns are. We did have a decal system. It didn't work well. It didn't work well because of accountability. It didn't work well because, you know, many people would say it happens. I lost my decal. And some people might give it to somebody else. I had my car detailed and they took my decal. And you lose the immediacy of getting a permit. So you either need to come here to City Hall, not City Hall, but parking, customer service.
Monica, let me cut you off. Would there be potential? And where I'm at with this, I need more input, so I'm going to hear this. I think we hash out some high-level details, but it's not a decision I'm comfortable moving entirely forward with one way or the other today. But where I'm essentially thinking about things, and again, I need a further mosaic of information, is
it's intriguing to me have a bifurcated system, somewhat with you refer to, but in our residential areas, why we couldn't implement that decal system. Let me ask you a quick question. Right now, where we have, let's call it the virtual or X system for our residential areas. Walk me through how over spring break, we have a parking agent that's going to walk down Pennsylvania Avenue immediately to the west of Flamingo Park. How will they efficiently and expediently identify the cars that are parked there that are residential?
So we have two ways of doing license plate recognition. That's a technology that we use, right? And so the officer comes to a vehicle, scans the tag, right? Now, you actually scan the tag. When you scan something, you take a picture, right? And then it converts into alphanumeric so that it can be compared to a database. So we do that. Nights, we do have an LPR vehicle. That vehicle, the officer would drive, it has cameras, and it will scan the tags.
So that's more autonomous. It's more expedient than an officer just going car to car, quite literally scanning a license plate. And how many LPR readers do we have?
Currently, we have one because we have one or two vehicles that need repair. But to tell you that to scan a tag, it could take 14 seconds. Definitely under a minute. It's very similar to what you do when you go to a restaurant and scan your QR code, and it immediately gives you
a
bill.
I'm a simple person, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm using that scenario where I'm a parking attendant, sorry if I misworded mm-hmm. that, I'm walking down the street, a minute per car, I don't know, can 70 cars fit in a residential zone north to south from 9th to 10th Street? Perhaps. We're looking at an hour to sit there and clear one single block in a residential district, and that's just to confirm if the car's parked there residential. I need, this is me personally, I'm one vote, but to not implement a decal system in the residential areas, I'm going to need some pretty significant briefings about why we shouldn't move forward with that, and then I'll turn it over to my colleagues.
And I know Commissioner Suarez was an initial sponsor of it, and then I joined in, but I'll comment after him.
Thank you for recognizing me. So I brought this item forward because, I think we only have a finite number of parking enforcement officers, and there's nothing like community, okay? Community. Community engagement for the parking and in their neighborhoods. Every neighborhood is different. Every neighborhood is unique in a sense. And everyone knows whose cars are out parked outside. You know, so like in Flamingo Park, on certain blocks, everyone knows whose cars belongs to who. And that being said, you know, parking can't be everywhere at once. But who can be everywhere at once are the residents in each neighborhood. And so if I'm a resident and I notice that there's just no parking today on like a Friday or a Saturday, and I'm seeing cars that I've never seen before, and they don't have a decal on their car, I can call parking, and I can have them come, and I can have them scan the tag and see if they actually have a permit or a, not a permit, but a visitor pass. And if not, the enforcement happens right there. I mean, it really is like a community effort when it comes to parking. And so I don't know how many parking officers we have right now. Monica, if you can give me that through the chair.
We're staffed for 25 full-timers and 25 part-timers.
Okay, but 25 full-timers mean how many in the shift? Is it like half in the morning? Okay, so basically like 13. 12 or 13 during at any given time. I mean, our city is 7 miles long, 1 mile wide. We possibly can't cover all of that area during that time. And we also only have, like our parking director said, one license plate reader that can be used, and I don't know which time, but if we use our residents, you know, to really observe if there's not illegal parking, but parking, unpermitted parking, I think that goes a long way. And I think having a dual system is certainly a way to go. I've walked with these parking enforcement officers, and I see how cumbersome it could be. There's nothing easier than walking by a car, seeing a decal, and then walking to the next car. That takes a second. Yep. And so, and if there is no decal, then you go through the process of taking a picture, waiting for it to upload, and then seeing if there's a print. Like, that's, to me, fine, and more efficiently. So, I don't know what else is there to. I don't know what other arguments you would have against that. And I'm open to hear what my colleagues have to say about that.
Yeah, Monica, I'd like during spring break, if you'd be able to arrange some time for me to spend a few hours out there walking with the parking enforcement agencies, because any decision I make, I want it to be done with the full breadth of information. So I want to turn over to my colleagues.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Either one. Whichever.
Go ahead. Yeah, I had my hand raised first. Yeah, thank you. And so I want to thank Commissioner Suarez for bringing this item forward. And the parking director knows this. I have long liked the idea of decals. Maybe it's because I'm a little bit more old-fashioned, but I do think the self-enforcement that can be done by the community is a great value added. And I just remember, when I first moved to Miami Beach, and you would be able to, walk up and down. I lived on Bay Road. And you would be able to see, who had the decal for that zone, who didn't. And especially at night when people were getting home from work and there was, there's always a lack of parking. You would be able to see, if there's two or three cars that are abusing it. Maybe there was a party happening somewhere close by, or people decided to go to South Beach and park in the residential area. We were able to call the parking department because now we, the residents, knew that, okay, that car doesn't belong there. I know now residents can run the tag on a system on the city's website, but can you imagine? A resident can't go car by car and run the tag by the city's website to see which car is there or not when there's a lack for parking. And so because of that, I am very much supportive of this, and especially in areas where we have such a great deficit for parking, like, for example, Flamingo Park and areas in South Beach in general. Which is our district that has the greatest demand for parking, Monica?
Flamingo Park.
And it's such a pedestrian area of our city. People are constantly walking. It would be so much easier for our residents to support the mission of the parking department if we had this. The one thing that I want to make sure is that we fix the issue with the LPR. I think that the LPRs on the cars should be used throughout the day. I don't understand why we would want a parking enforcement officer having to scan each tag individually when they can just drive by it. LPRs are such a great tool. And I have a question. Do these LPRs only look at the fact whether someone resides in a residential zone, or does it identify other things?
So X parking houses...
Our license plate readers on the cars.
Right. Yeah. So the database contains all payment, whether it's decal or meter or anything. It's all included in the database.
Okay, and like arrest warrants, would you be able to see? No, you don't see that type of stuff there, but still.
But we do see, we could see scoff laws.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm a big proponent of the technology, of the use of the technology. I would say that those two or three vehicles that are out of service need to be fixed and should be fixed ASAP. It's a detriment to the taxpayers that we've purchased this technology and that we're only using one, but we have so many out of commission because they haven't been repaired. Why haven't they been repaired?
There was an issue with the technology, and I'll ask. Let me say the reason why we don't use LPR vehicles during the day is because of traffic. You don't want another vehicle stuck in traffic, and it's not very efficient. We use them at night when.
But these are the vehicles that we actually do want on our streets. Yeah. And I get what you're saying. This is these are the vehicles. I got your point. But if we purchased these vehicles with the taxpayers' money, that was a budgeting decision one time of a city commission, and it was with the intent that we implement them. And, you know, yes, there's traffic. There's always going to be traffic. But it's like if we say that we're not going to police a neighborhood because we don't want another patrol unit on the streets because of traffic. No, we need this.
Yeah,
we need
I'm talking about efficiency. I'm not talking about putting a vehicle. I'm talking about... when you're sitting in traffic, you can only scan a tag as you move along.
Well, Monica,
that's what I'm talking
Monica,
about.
I don't think there's a huge amount of traffic on Pennsylvania Avenue in Flamingo Park at 2 p.m. on a Saturday, but Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez.
Okay. So in 2020, I don't know if you remember, there was a move to privatize the parking department. And what that would have meant is that, you know, we would have given this over to a private contractor who would have literally towed and ticketed us for profit. We were able to thwart that by a very narrow vote of the commission. And I want to thank Commissioner Samulin, who, you know, voted for that because it was very unpopular. It was a big fight, right? And Commissioner Gongora and Minor, who came forward and really saved the parking department. Now what we have when we look at our parking department is a department that is no longer the profitable enterprise it once was. At one point, the parking department was probably our most profitable department across the city. What we've seen over time is a reduction in the amount of employees, a reduction in the amount of tickets and tows, and so we are not enforcing, just like we saw, you know, that we're not enforcing the law on the homeless, or that we're not giving out speeding tickets, we are also not giving out parking tickets. The amount of revenue that we could generate if our vehicles were working and we did have the proper equipment that we need that we don't have, and we did have the amount of employees that we need that we don't currently have because we have not staffed the department the way that it should be. And frankly, we need to look at the reason why people aren't staying in the parking department. Like, they go and they get the job and then they don't want to stay. So maybe we need to either raise the salary, make it more attractive. But I would tell you that when you look at the model in the city of Miami, they are generating tremendous, tremendous amounts of revenue. Now, we are coming in to the 21st century finally, because instead of just having Park Mobile, we now have pay by phone.
Yeah.
Okay. That was in itself a huge step. Now, what this body needs to do is take action to upgrade our equipment, return the decals, staff the department, and make it what it once was, okay? Because you can't just come here and park and expect to never, ever get a ticket. We want a robust parking department. I don't know how many vacancies do we currently have, Monica, in the parking department in terms of employees?
Good afternoon, Alberto Ventura, Assistant Parking Director. We currently have 10 part-time positions vacant. All okay. full-time positions okay. have been...
Wait, can I just finish? Because I have the floor. Okay, so when you look at this, what we did was we converted the parking department. I personally think that the parking department, by this administration, has been under some sort of hostile takeover. These part-time positions need to be converted to full-time positions. And by the way, once you convert them to full-time positions, get them the right equipment, put on the decals, it will pay for itself. But the department has been decimated, okay? And you, the only people that suffer are our residents who aren't getting the enforcement that they need. So the good news is that I hope under this administration and with you guys that we can restore the parking department to what it once was. And that's what we need to move toward. But Monica, the idea of not repairing a license plate reader, okay, because we don't want to put a car on the street, that is embarrassing. That the 10 positions that we have available that nobody wants to fill, and the fact that we're not filling them and nobody is out there. And by the way, the guys who are in the parking department come to me and tell me their equipment doesn't work. So I don't understand what directive was given to destroy the department. But I would advocate not just for these decals, but I would advocate that we do the decals, we keep this item somehow here, and that we come back and we see and you bring back how we can possibly staff the department in a better way and repair the equipment. Because I think that this needs a little bit more attention at this point.
Commissioner Bach.
So, you know, just from a dollars and cents perspective, because that's why we're here,
hiring people, I mean, we want people to be employees, and we want them to have long, happy careers here and live here, ideally, in our newly developed Barclay building. But we have, you know, to your point earlier, we bought this equipment, and we have these cars, and they are cheaper and more resilient than people who, they don't have to call out sick. Well, they're currently calling out sick, but they shouldn't have to call out sick, right? They can. There are neighborhoods where there isn't traffic at all times of day and night, so they can be deployed you know, strategically, so they're not trying to get up Alton at rush hour, but they can be someplace else. But to have them sitting there paid for and not being used and doing the work of people who haven't been hired yet because we can't fill the jobs, and the cars won't need pensions, we have to get them back up and running. And I know I've had conversations with other department heads and with our CFO about the fact that there's so much deferred maintenance in the city, that we do our resident and visitor-facing maintenance first before we do anything else. And I do understand that that's a thing and that's important. But I would argue this is one of those things. It is a resident and visitor-facing thing. It's not sexy. It's not pretty. But it will enhance the experience of living here and visiting here and make your collective jobs easier as we try to fill the spots that we have for part-time or full-time, as the case may be. But we've got to get them back on the road.
So originally I said I was going to keep this here, didn't want to move forward, but wanted to hear this. Seems like we have some pretty broad support here to move forward and get this to commission. Do one of my colleagues want to make a motion to move forward in favor
May
of...
I say I'm going to make a motion. I'm sorry. I'd like to make a motion to move forward the decal the decals. Yes.
Second.
And the repair of the equipment. And can we keep this? Can we make this motion and keep this item here so it comes back next week when we can hear how
for
many
an
employees?
Update.
Yeah, for an update on the state of the equipment and the state of how many of the positions have been filled.
Yeah, let's move the decal system forward to commission, and then we can put another item on the FERC agenda to essentially get that update.
Okay, so it's the
decal and the equipment repair.
My motion is to move the decals forward to the full commission, and then keep the vehicle and employee situation here so that we can get an update at the next meeting.
Aren't we directing them to make repairs?
We cannot direct the committee.
We can't?
We cannot direct the committee. That is a function only of the city commission. A committee is only advisory to
the
city.
No, but aren't we directing the commission to direct the department? Recommend.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, wrong word. So, it's not Basil. Okay. I can't use the word.
Rick, I think you've heard us here. We want the parking department robust. Go out and hire those people and start the enforcement.
If I can clarify the motion is to recommend to the commission to direct the administration to develop to re-implement the decal code program and to repair the broken equipment, and the item to also be retained at FERC. The parking department to return with an update on the staffing.
All in favor?
Aye.
If I may, it's not
we're
repairs.
Done with the item. Yep.
It's not Thank repairs. You. It's replacement of the LPR units.
Okay. Replacement.
I'll note that in the motion. Repair, replace.
Okay. I want to get Commissioner Rosen, our vice chair, out of here. I don't want to, but she has to. So let's call five, actually, discuss funding for educational enhancements, and then we're going to move on to item six, which was a time certain. But let's do number five, discuss funding for educational enhancements. Rick, anything you need to get out, or Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, do you want to tee that up?
Look, I'm very proud of our education department. We provide services and, you know, wraparound services for students that no other municipality, I would say, in the state of Florida does have a robust program like we do. Our feeder patter is amazing. When I look at the IB, now we have this quality education committee that includes both public and private schools, funding for tutoring, funding for dual enrollment, funding vouchers for, vouchers if you want to have your child in a nursery school. So Leslie, what is the specific ask? And I would just move this and second it so that we can keep on going. Would you like to explain exactly what we're funding so that we know? It's tutoring, it's reading, math, IB, anti-defamation, drug. There's so many great things.
Leslie,
what's the
welcome.
Total?
Thank you. Leslie Rosenfeld, Chief Education Officer. So in March, when the commission decided to expand the Committee for Quality Education to any public or private school, charter, public, private school in our city, to participate in the Committee for Quality Education, that increased the membership from the 8 public schools by an additional 11. So we have now 19 potential members and school members. And of the 11 new members, 6 are actually active and participating in the committee. Over the past few months, they've learned about many of the educational enhancements that the city funds and implements, and they have a lot of interest in many of those programs. We have not had specific conversations with each of these schools to determine which educational enhancements specifically are of interest or would be applicable to their school populations. So not knowing that information, I can't provide a specific number per se, because we don't know which current educational enhancements, or if there's other educational enhancements that we have not explored that might be of interest.
So where I'm looking at this, I guess a couple of different ways we can go from just following.
So it's a $15,000 increase, right, that we're approving here? Without a reliance on chamber, wait.
That might be the sister cities. Sorry, I don't know why I was looking at this.
Yeah.
If I can.
How much is the total allocation? I apologize, because I was thinking of the extra monies to cover the vouchers that weren't covered this year. Is that what we're approving right now? Or is it the overall?
No. What this item really was, is, you know, I had conversations with Dr. Roosevelt about this, is right now we spend approximately $2 million-ish on the 6 public schools supplementing, you know, services that would not be provided by the public schools. When it was expanded to the private and religious schools to the QEC, really what we determined is, does the commission want to get into that line of business? Do they want to entertain that? And the concern was, I think, from our side, was if you start calling them and saying, hey, we have this menu of options we'd love, you know, to fund for you, they could create an expectation that it was going to be funded, where we don't have that direction. So I think what we were looking for is, if this is the interest of the committee, to go to commission to direct the administration to begin having those discussions. Now, obviously, this could have a severe financial impact if the full amount was there, because if 6 schools are $2 million, you could be looking at millions of dollars. The commission could put a limit and say, you know, they could open up the menu to a dollar value per school of 10 or 15 or 50 or whatever it is. But that was really the thing was, do we want to get – the policy decision to, do we want to get into that line of business?
Let me give my 10 seconds, and then I'll hand it over to Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez. I fall somewhere into that $2 million pie. I don't want to shrink the allocation to our public schools by putting more hands in that pie, but I also don't want to provide that same allocation to the private schools that we do. So not a pro rata. So the $6 million or the $2 million for 6 schools, I don't want to provide that pro rata equivalent to every single private school, because the budgetary consequences would be significant. But I also don't want to shrink the resources that our public schools are getting. So I think we find a happy balance somewhere in between there. Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez.
Okay, I wanted to just hear from Commissioner Batt about what she thought. And what I would do is say to Leslie, I would be okay funding certain things, because I think that the tutoring is important. I think the dual enrollment is important. I think the idea that a student or a resident of Miami Beach can go to a private school and then we fund that, we're funding mental health. I mean, it's important, because we could have a student at the Matter Academy in North Beach that has an issue, and we save that student because we funded a mental health allocation. So from my perspective, and that's something that's not being funded any place else. From my perspective, I would like Leslie to go out and speak with these committees, find the best deal that you can get, with giving them the most services that you can. Come back to us. Obviously, it can't be, you know, $1 million, but what can we provide? Where can we get the most bang for our buck? What monies do we spend that has the largest impact? For example, if we offer the tutoring services, that could, you know, a child that just doesn't have those services or can't afford it, I mean, we help them along. So, I mean, there has to be I would like to find out what it is that you think the committee wants, and then come back to us and we'll fund it depending if we can. I mean, and if it's too much, then we won't. But
so does that mean that we're giving each school an equal amount?
I didn't want to do. I mean, what are you? What would you see as the optimum, Leslie? You're the expert here. You're meeting with the committee. I'm not.
Well, I think the conversation is not with the committee. It's with each of the schools. I would have to have a conversation with the parent representative of each particular school. There's currently 6 out of the 11 that have representation on the QEC, as well as with each school site administration to better understand what their needs are. Each school is very unique. Not to mention, depending upon what their needs are, unlike the existing relationship that we have with the public school system, where we implement and negotiate with one entity, each of these private schools or charter schools is a separate discussion, a separate entity. Each program is unique to those particular sites. So it is quite an undertaking.
Commissioner Bott.
So, listen, I want every resident and their children in Miami Beach, regardless of where they educate their kids, to have the best possible outcome. That is not up for debate, because what I'm about to toss into the mix is going to get spun. But let me restate that for the record. I want every resident and their child, regardless of where they get educated in the city, to have the best possible outcome. I find it a little bit concerning to take public tax dollars and use them for private institutions, religious institutions. I don't know that we are in that business, especially if those institutions are not coming to us saying, hey, we need X. Can you help us figure out a way to accomplish that? And another way of doing this could be, and I don't know, this is my thought, because I want everyone to get what they need within the constraints of our budget. I obviously want all of us to get what we need within the constraints of our billion-dollar budget. But would there be an opportunity to take what we do for the public schools as the best, most productive top 5 or top 10 items that we fund for public schools and make those available as a menu selection that private and or religious institutions can choose from, saying this is the best bang for the buck that we're seeing citywide, and possibly with supervision from you, but move it into a parks kind of after school enrichment program, depending on what they are, so that it's open to anybody and it doesn't matter what school you're going to. So you're not funding private and or religious institutions. You're supporting students and residents of this community, which is a bigger philosophical government issue. That's one thing. Well, I guess it's two things. Is could we say, put together, you know, this is the template of what is the most effective use of our dollars in the schools where we're already doing it. And then if there is a specific need at a specific school, you know, we are desperately trying to do X, is there sort of a grant application process or, you know, some other way that they could make themselves heard and we could try to find funding for them within our budgetary constraints that isn't the sort of carte blanche of here's the Amex, go build whatever programs you want.
Commissioner Fernandez.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I
need to leave. Okay, go for it. No, okay. Go.
Can we do you want to say your piece?
Well,
I want to move this along.
Well, I mean, I was just going to say that, you know, Commissioner Bott, you bring up an interesting perspective. I just say, you know, a lot of times parents put children, whether it be in religious school or some other private school, because, you know, rather culturally or some other situation, it's better for the child to be in a more private setting, because they won't be able to assimilate as well in a public setting. And so I wonder then if we create these programs through the parks program, are we still running into the same challenge that we're overcoming by being able to work with some of the private entities and some of the private schools? Because at the end of the day, we're not giving the money to the private school. The money is going to children of our community, whose parents are also taxpayers. And that's ultimately it. That's how I see it. The money, yes, is it going to into the bank of the private school? Yes, but it's trickling down to serve a child of our community that right now needs a service that they aren't getting.
Here's what I would propose. Well, obviously, we're not going to put a guidance counselor like we pay at every other school on the private school campuses, and they don't need that necessarily, because as you can see, we have a few nursery schools on here. So different schools have different needs. Can you put together a package of what you think would have the best impact, the strongest impact? With the biggest bang for our buck, without creating full-time positions, possibly maybe mental health for the high schools, but it's a tele-mental health and not necessarily having a guidance counselor on site. So could you put something together and then bring it back to us in a month? Would that be okay with you guys? And then we can choose? Okay, and I would bring this up to the Committee for Quality Education and ask them, what are your top items? You know, ask the representatives of these private schools that are now serving on the committee, what is it that you guys want on this menu of items that we have? And then come back to us and let us know. And I think there's a willingness to fund it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's for the kids, Jason. This is the best commissioner we can spend if we don't. I'm actually working on another program with Miami-Dade College. We have amazing programs that we fund. For example, right now, if you're a first-time college student, first-generation college student, we have matching programs with FIU. We're going to do the same thing with Miami-Dade College. So if you're a resident of Miami Beach and you register at Miami-Dade College and it's the first time you've ever gone to college, you know you get a scholarship from us. And the state, is it the state that matches it, Leslie?
Historically, the state has matched.
The state has matched it. So these are groundbreaking programs that nobody else does, and it offers opportunities that you don't find anywhere. And I'm so proud of our program. So I made the motion. Do we have a
second?
Yes. Second. Okay.
If I can, Vice Chair, just to clarify, is maybe the direction is to go to the commission to direct the administration to work with the active members of the QEC, because not all active, the active members of the QEC to open that discussion, as I mentioned, with them to see what services they would be interested in, and then for Leslie to work with them to come back to this item be retained and to come back to FERC to discuss what that package would look like of the current six schools and what that financial ask would be, and then the FERC can decide, you know, whether to fully fund or partially fund.
I don't think we need to go to the commission in order for Leslie to meet with the committee and give us an idea of what we could approve. I would have her casually work with them, come up with a proposal, come back to us, and then we will send whatever final proposal to the full commission so that we circumvent. We can do that.
So we're going to continue the item to next month so that Leslie can work on this further.
Is that enough? Do you need more from us today, Leslie? Did you need something definitive that we're not giving you?
I just want to make sure everyone understands. We certainly will include in the conversation the representative from each of the additional six schools that are active in the QEC that are private or charter, but we also need to involve the school site administration from each of those schools. Ultimately, it is their decision as to what programming they feel is going to be most beneficial to the students in the school. And I just like to make sure everyone understands, we do not cut checks to the schools. We do not cut any checks or fund any money directly to any of our schools, including our public schools. The City of Miami Beach creates and manages every single educational enhancement. We oversee them all, and we ensure that they are being implemented as was the intention of this elected body. We do not cut checks to anybody. And then, Commissioner Bott, regarding your suggestion, although I can't speak for parks, I'm fairly certain our parks departments are packed after school. But one of the reasons that we have historically implemented these programs during the school day, during school hours, is to eliminate any obstacles for any child to have access. The moment you offer programs after school hours, many, many children in our community run into transportation issues, and then they're excluded from participation. So obviously, if they're already there and they're a captive audience, and we have the opportunity to work within those hours, they have access.
Thank you for clarification on both points. And I just have a quick question, because I thought what we had talked about was identifying the most successful, you know, like the biggest bang for the buck programs before going out and saying, what's your wish list?
I think we're going to work from the list of initiatives we already have underway, which have been supported and are being implemented very well, and we'll use that as our menu of options.
And there are 11 new members of the QEC, but only six have been active. So what happens to the other five? We just wait to hear from them? Or
I've reached out to them and invited them to join the QEC in the past. I'll reach again and encourage that participation. But until they select a member who is then sworn in, they're not currently part of our QEC.
Thank you for clarifying all of those points and putting some of my concerns on bigger philosophical issues to rest. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Do we have direction here?
Yes, it's going to do you think 1 month is going to be sufficient? If I can, that it'll be retained and return upon the completion of this task, because it's really going to be dependent on dealing with these six entities. So right. I don't think there's a guarantee necessarily, but I know Leslie is very diligent in her job, and she is very interested. So she will absolutely return with haste, because this would have to be something we would want to incorporate in our 25 budget process. So I think direction is – it's not direction. The request to come back with additional information is clear.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. Thank you so much, Doctor.
Thank you.
Let's hear item number six, discuss a fee waiver at the convention center. Heather, thank you so much. I know you've been working tremendously in the background with a number of different stakeholders and constituents. I know my daughter attends South Point Elementary, and I put – there were some people in contact with that school. Not only did you say – we could do this for South Point, but you said let's put this on equal footing and expand this and give these opportunities to all the schools in our community. So I want to commend you and applaud you for that thought, and let you kick this off here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for presenting my item. I placed this item on the agenda of the October 2023 City Commission meeting so that we could work with our city administration in finding the opportunity to find fee waivers and make it a little bit more affordable for our schools to be able to have their activities, like their graduations, here at the Miami Beach Convention Center, rather than having to go off Miami Beach to Coral Gables or to other places to host these events. It makes it also easier for our community and for the parents and for relatives to be able to participate, as the chair mentioned as well. So I'd like to pass it over to the administration through the chair to come back with their update on what they've been able to work on.
Yes, of course, and apologies for presenting that, Commissioner Fernandez.
No worries.
Still getting the process down.
Good afternoon, commissioners, and I'm just excited that we are all excited about helping the schools. I'm joined here with my colleague, Leslie Rosenfeld, who works with the schools, and this has been really a collaborative effort. And as Commissioner Fernandez said, we, knowing that some of the schools, specifically South Point Elementary, have been coming to us, and a few other schools that come to the convention center, and it is sometimes cost prohibitive for the PTAs to come up with the funds. We tried to do something that was holistic and invite all the schools to come. And Leslie, with Leslie's help, we've reached out to all of the schools to see what their thoughts are to do that, because it's more cost efficient for the convention center to do it over 2 days, and specifically the 2 days that are really around the time that we have those graduations, which is the last Thursday, Friday of May. The convention center is a little quiet, and it's an opportunity to have all of the schools have their graduations or their promotions here. And as the commissioner said, it's easy access. It democratizes having to get over to Miami to go to do to have your graduations there. We're a bigger space, so that means that you don't have to just bring your parents, that you can bring your grandparents and your aunt and your uncle and your neighbor, and they can all come in and see the promotions and the graduations. And I have to tell you, last year, having seen South Point Elementary's promotion, it tugs at your heart to see these little kids. You know, they're so excited, you know. So anyway, to go back to the task at hand, we did reach out to all the schools. Some of the schools had already made
plans for their promotions and their graduations. Miami Beach High and specifically has some concerns about just having the seating and how the seating is in the convention center. And so we're going to still work with them. And they're interested in potentially doing it next year. But this year, they're going to go to Miami for their graduations. But we still have three classes for promotions that would like to still be in the convention center. And that's South Point Elementary and Feinberg Elementary and Middle School, which is K through 8. And they're still interested in having their promotions at the convention center. And we're looking forward to in 2025 to hopefully have more of the public schools here, because it is an opportunity to share a building that was built by the community and let it serve the community, and to be able to have the graduations kind of back to back. So when you have a little one and a middle one or a high one, that you can all come together. So to do that, it is a cost to do that. And so we have in the proposal that it be a cost not to exceed $50,000. It will not hit $50,000, but that's a demarcation that says that if it goes beyond that, then we have to go to the school board. It's something that we can work on the convention center through OVG 360 and Sodexo and even Smart Cities and Everlast. They've all come together to work with us to make it something that the community can afford, but there is still cost, labor that's associated with all that. And it individually for each school, it's a pretty nice price, but if we put the graduations together over 2 days, we can make it something that is reasonable for the city and phenomenal for the parents. And yeah, I'm going to turn over to Leslie and see if you want to add anything to what I said.
No, actually, the school site administration and the district were incredibly appreciative of the opportunity and the offer. And as Heather indicated, because of the timing, several of the schools have already made arrangements for 2024. However, two of the schools are very interested in having their promotional ceremonies at the convention center. They're incredibly excited, as are those members of our community, and we'll continue to ensure that the schools know that this opportunity exists, so that if they do want to consider it, they'll have more time to plan going forward.
Thank you, Doctor. And Heather, what you and what your team have been working on just described is the epitome of community. There's not much more bang for our buck we get for community than bring together generations of family for a monumental day. So while you said you have to see the ceremony to have your heart tugged at, you've already done so for me. So
with the $50,000 fee waiver, how much of the facility do we get to cover?
You mean the space?
Yeah, how much of the costs?
It would be less than $50,000, just up to, but it would cover the space, which would be the Ocean Drive Ballroom. And once we have the high school, then it would be the Grand Ballroom. And it also covers all the labor and the production cost, the internet, their streaming, and then there's also a little light food and beverage.
Okay. All right. And so what do we think? So anything beyond that, the schools will have to pay?
Yes.
Okay. So I would want to make a motion to the full commission to approve a room rental waiver for the convention center and a request for sponsorship in amount not to exceed $50,000 as part of this fiscal year, the current fiscal year, so yeah, we can host these graduations.
Second that.
And Mr. CFO, is there a way that this could be recurring so the schools don't have to come back on an annual basis? This seems like a tremendous program where if we can provide certainty and surety to our educational community that they can essentially plan ahead and they don't already have this booked.
I would ask Heather to chime in on that. I mean, obviously, the resolution of the commission could be for this to be a recurring open item, could have a specific time frame of 5 year or 1 year. I know the recommendation here is the 1 year, but I would ask, is it, because it's with the convention center, I know it gets a little trickier there. Is this an option that could be opened up to a recurring, or this should be dealt with on an annual basis?
I think it could be. I mean, I'd have to speak with the convention center, but I think this could be a recurring. Again, we chose dates that typically that the convention center is fairly light. Now, obviously, if the convention center books something in those times, then we'll adjust to that, because the graduations are typically that last week of May, first week of June. So if we stay within that area, I think that the convention center can do that. I think it's a good idea to do it for multiple years, only for, as Leslie just mentioned, for the schools to plan in advance.
And then again, we would keep the cost as low as possible. And I've spoken, we've spoken to the schools, and we actually have Leslie Abrams, who I'm sure you know, Commissioner Magazine. She's on the line. And they know that the basic thing that we're trying to do is give them a basic, really great graduation. But if the school has the money to do something bigger, then they do that.
Yeah. I'll follow my, you know, somebody I admire, Commissioner Gelber would say, you know, no need to talk while you're ahead. So I'm sure there's a bunch of parents on here advocating for this, but I think you're going to see some support here. So appreciate the people that have tuned in. You move that. Is yes. there a second?
Yes.
Second. Okay. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And we'll show that as an annual recurring recommendation. Okay.
And thank you to the Economic Development Department and to our education office for working on this so diligently. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Teamwork.
Yes.
Great job.
Teamwork.
Thank you all to everyone involved. We have a 1 o'clock time certain. I received a notice. Somebody that's important to that conversation is on the way. Commissioner Bott, I know this came up item 8 at the last commission agenda. I don't think there's financial implications here. From my understanding through our – maybe it didn't come up at the commission. Maybe it was through the briefing thinking about. But I think this was for the parking director, Ms. Beltran, to just go out and engage in talks with private – let me let you present this. I learned last time.
Thank you. Yeah.
Getting there.
We – listen, we're all learning on the job. So we all heard when we were canvassing, and anybody who's lived here knows that parking is at a premium and is hard to come by, especially in certain neighborhoods, including North Beach. And there have been a couple of different ways to try to approach that, one with a permit system, which most residents and business owners are vehemently against in North Beach. For a lot of reasons. The other idea was to try to go to underutilized lots and see if they could be used at nighttime for parking. And I asked you to, you and your team to go and see what's available. We had had an update a couple of months ago, I don't know, it's a blur now, but a while back about how that is going, and I would love to hear the current update. It doesn't seem great, but I'm like a dog with a bone. I'm not going to let it go.
Again, good afternoon. Monica Beltran, parking director. So actually, we did this exercise before, and it didn't render a good result because one of the concerns we have, of course, is when construction occurs at the 72nd Street lot, there's going to be even more shortage of parking, right? So we did that. And this time we took a different approach. With the TPC, the committee, and also with some residents, talking to them, et cetera. And we did go out. The one observation that we discussed over by your place, that it took us, I don't know how many calls, finally they responded. They're like, no, we don't even have sufficient for hours, though you see it empty. Other folks...
I'm sorry, which place was that? Which lot was that?
At Parkview.
I'm sorry, the people at Parkview Point Tower, mm-hmm. whatever it is, said they don't have enough spots for their own needs?
Correct. They were not interested. And spoke to different stakeholders, reached out to lot owners, etc. Most of the lots that were empty are now encumbered for future construction. So that was that. So we had no interest. So, but in the shared idea where, for example, Blue Sky, when it was there, that there's parking there, or the old bank lot, etc., we couldn't reach out to every single one of them, but we reached out as well to the towing companies because they have agreements with those facilities to tow, and there was no interest at all. People don't want strangers parking in their facilities, and they had seemingly no interest to become in any way, shape, or form commercial parking facilities. I've been working with Rick and with the attorneys regarding, you know, what changes would occur if I have a lot, if I have parking in my home, and I want to allow other people to use it, if I receive compensation, then it becomes commercial, right? But if I give it for free, where's my liability? And people just want to have control over their space, it seems. It did not render good results. And we actually went out there and walked with Patty and I. We met with her. We walked the area. Couldn't find anything.
Commissioner.
Yes.
Through the chair.
Yes.
How about sometimes it requires something a little bit more formal from government. And I'm just thinking out loud. I haven't vetted this through the administration staff or anyone. You know, what if we put out there like a request for proposals or something like that, saying, you know, the city wants to engage in a public-private partnership to construct parking facilities in North Beach to see if there's any private property owner, any condominiums that may have extra land, and maybe they have, you know, they're in the need for funding to address issues that their building may have with 40-year recertifications, and they're willing to, you know, work with the city, giving the city land or something. But us, you know, put out a call, a formal call out there to do some sort of P3 and see what type of responses we get back from the community. And I don't know what the attorney, our city attorney, might think about it, who's the expert on these types of deals, but just throwing that out there.
I don't know that we would want to start building more garages necessarily, but maybe a P3 in a business unit, you know, mm-hmm. or so that, you know, you could get a permit so you're not a stranger. You are permitted to park in that parking lot. We will do the, you know, whatever needs to be done to bring it up to code to be a parking surface.
Right.
And in return for that, the building might get some small revenue that can be used towards building maintenance. Interesting idea. I'd be happy to have further conversations and brainstorm. We need to find a solution. The solution is not going to be to build more massive parking structures all over North Beach, because where?
But I like your idea.
Any ideas that can build on this or, you know, continue the conversation, I think should be entertained at least as further conversations.
Maybe we could develop this idea. Yeah, let's keep it open.
Let's keep it open.
Yeah, and maybe we can develop this idea with the city attorney. Maybe we can have a sunshine meeting about it. So that before the next finance meeting, maybe we can come with a proposal.
Yeah, and I'd like to do a sunshine meeting and also encourage some of the stakeholders in North Beach to be part of the conversation, because maybe they have access to things that we don't, just because.
I just got a question. You know, I constantly get text messages about a garage that's in North Beach that constantly riddled with vagrancy and seemingly criminal issues.
The Deauville garage.
The Deauville garage.
I have some work in progress on that.
Okay. Okay, good. Okay.
Monica,
leave it at that. I trust
results,
Tanya.
But yeah, thank you for the efforts, and let's leave this open.
So I'll show the item heard and the return at the March or April?
Will we have enough time to March?
Let's try March, and we can always
defer. Yeah, we can defer it if we need to pull together a sunshine meeting with all of us at the city that are involved, and also some of the stakeholders and business owners in North Beach, if they would like to. I mean, they're not required, but it seems like it would be a good idea to have them be a part of the conversation.
Yeah, and I think we have a hard stop at 1:45. Let's get two quick items out of the way. Yeah, 1:30. Can you breeze through two, if you want to get that heard, and we'll let one of the stakeholders for the concert item.
Yeah, if I can. Item two was a retained item that had one minor update, and Alba's here. It was a request from the FERC to have the Legal Services of the Greater Miami to give
quarterly update.
Right, and this should finally close out the item to give an update on what happened at the last legislative session, and then obviously it's up to the committee if that's it or to retain.
I read the memo. I'm happy to make a motion to accept the update provided in writing.
Perfect.
So I'll move accepting the update through the memo.
Thank you.
Happy Friday, Albert.
Thank you.
Chair, that was even shorter than the 2 to 3.
Thank you to Mr. Robert Jack.
Can we do the same thing with number three, CFO?
If I can, on that one also, it's a request to really bifurcate the item. There's a Tyler update that's kind of been a standing item. The administration, and Frank is running towards the podium here, is we plan on coming back in a month or two, so we'd like to retain it so the administration can.
Motion to retain.
Keep it as efficient as Alba, Frank.
And if I can, and the other part was related to the building department, which went through their update, which is going to be converted to a quarterly LTC because it was discussed.
Let's discuss
neighborhoods.
The item. We don't discuss the item, or can we just keep it open until...
On the building department one, it was just their final update, but they did it at neighborhoods, and neighborhoods request to be converted to an LTC. So it's obviously up to whether the committee wants to have the same update that was done at neighborhoods on the building.
I think we're all there.
Okay, so we'll close out that aspect, and we'll retain as Tyler, and work with Frank. It should come back in the next month or two, related to, as I spoke about, our utility billing needing a new merchant credit card processor. Is there anything? The 1 minute version?
Nope.
I did it.
Okay. Frank, take the rest of the afternoon off. Tremendous work.
And give yourself a raise while you're at it.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to defer item number one, keep it open.
Yes.
Till next month. And also, what I would like to do is maybe as part of that item, I'd like to invite the 41st Street bid. Just for an update, because I know a lot of work has been going on in the 41st Street bid, and there's been things put out into the public, ITNs and that type of stuff. And I just want to get a formal update of everything of what's been happening with the 41st Street bid as part of this item to attract economic development and new businesses to the area.
Yeah, I think I'd like this as a highlight of our next meeting. Maybe without committing to it right now, we almost open the meeting with that.
Okay, and that thank works. You.
Thank you so much,
thank
Raquel.
You.
Yes, thank you.
Little longer than Alvin Frank, but thank you, Raquel.
Racing through. Yeah,
can we move on to what we've all been waiting for? No, the 1 p.m. time certain, 14. Can we have Commissioner Fernandez, do you want to tee this up?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an item I placed on the agenda because, just this past Wednesday, we had such a robust and deliberate conversations about spring break. And frankly, for a year, we've been planning for spring break because we started at the end of last spring break, or some call it marshmallow, other call it March Madness. And the thing is, there's, I call it the lawbreakers that come with spring break. There's a negative connotation with these 2 weeks in March. And we can't continue to handle these 2 weekends through closures of businesses, through emergency curfews, through closing of garages and inflated parking rates just to be able to maintain a safe environment for our public. And the one thing we have heard over and over again is that positive activation, it's what helps transform time periods like this. And we witnessed it, for example, with the Air and Sea Show and how that has transformed Memorial Day weekend into a much safer activity. And so, this year we've taken decisions on some pretty drastic measures we're going to be doing to address the drastic and lawless situation we deal with during spring break. But we can't continue with those measures for next year. For next year, we need to do something different. We need to provide a certain type of activation that provides for a secure environment and fills our hotel rooms and keeps the economy flowing and provides a welcoming and safe environment also for our residents. So with that, I see Lisette is at the podium. And so I'd like to recognize Lisette.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. Lisa Arrogante, Director of Tourism and Culture for the City of Miami Beach. Today before you, you have the Miami Beach Music Festival. This item has some history with the city, first being heard in 2020. And in the memo before you, you have the latest recap when it was presented at the November 16th, 2022 commission meeting, when the event organizer proposed the festival for March of 2023. At the time, the city was negotiating with another large-scale event, so there were some scheduling issues, and the event organizer withdrew his proposal due to scheduling conflicts. So today, they are here to propose the Miami Beach Music Festival for March of 2025. They have submitted a presentation, which is up on the screen, and we have representatives from both David Wallach from and Jerry Libin is on the line, as well as Gregory Elias. And I'll hand it over now to David Mr. Wallach.
Thank you, Lisette. Forgive me, we're trying to coordinate from Curacao as well as get Jerry Libin on the Zoom. And I happened to just come out of, like you were discussing at the commission, bumper-to-bumper traffic from Biscayne Boulevard all the way to here. Okay. And I forgot my phone in the car, and June is on the way with that. So with that said, I will begin until they get on Zoom. And if Jerry Libin is on the Zoom, if someone could bring him into it.
I'm on, David.
Ah, well, Jerry, why don't you begin, and then I'll go after you.
Okay, very good.
And Greg, Greg will be on presently.
Mr. Chair, commissioners, thank you very much. Let me start by just clarifying that I'm here as a resident. I am not representing the Miami Beach Chamber of Commerce, as I have for the past 5 years, on this particular item. So I just wanted to be clear that I am here as a resident who believes that this would have, as you just heard from Commissioner Fernandez, a potential significantly positive impact on what has been historically a very, very difficult weekend for us. And I'd like to also just extend a personal note of, condolence to the commissioner on the loss of your grandmother this week. I'm sure it's been a very difficult week for you. Just a few points that hopefully at the end of the meeting today, you all will have as takeaways. As you heard, Memorial Day weekend was a disaster for our city. And believe it or not, it was like 14 years of disaster until the commission finally took a bold step and brought in Mickey Markoff and the Hyundai Air and Sea Show. It was a major investment. And it paid off. I believe everyone would agree that, now having seen it for the past number of years, it's an excellent, high-quality event. We've had little problems in the community. And I think that there's no reason to believe that with a high-quality festival that we're talking about, with the type of talent that Greg and Jan will be able to bring in, Jan Wilhelm from Mojo Concerts, an affiliate of Live Nation, they know how to do concerts. It's what they do. And we will have a stellar event. Second thing that you should keep in mind is the GMCVB and David Whitaker have committed, if the commission so desires to move forward with this, to work to promote with the hotels packages of tickets internationally to help fill our hotels at premium rates and put together packages with discount concert tickets. As you probably already know, two previous commissions had already approved the concept that is going to be before you today. And for various reasons, first it was COVID, and then it was Goodwood. They were unable to produce the event. If you're going to be able to move forward for 2025, and the producer is ready, willing, and able to do that, we need to be able to move quickly so that he has a contract by the end of March. And I realize that might be very difficult given the time where we're at, but that's really within your scope if you direct the administration at your March commission meeting next week to negotiate the contract and perhaps have a special one-item hearing to approve that contract at the end of March. But the last thing I just want to say before I turn it back to Greg and David, the concerns that we've heard, we have met with some of the groups, and not all of them, but some of the groups, and the concerns that we've heard expressed have been about the footprint and how it would impact beach access, and the increase of potentially 15 to 20,000 people during spring break and how that would impact policing and affect the city. And I'd like to just point out that we currently are in spring break and the footprint between 6th and 10th Street is completely closed off for Food and Wine Festival, which I think everyone would agree is a great event. There is no beach access. The setup and breakdown for that event far exceeds the amount of time, which the producer estimates to be about 12 days all in for the festival. And the Goodwood Festival, which was approved, had a much greater footprint. It included the street itself with cars going up and down Ocean Drive. It included Loomis Park, as well as the sand dune and the east of the seawall. The footprint was larger, and it took almost the entire month of March, which is why there was no ability, you know, for the concert to happen in 23. So with that as a background, I would turn it over to Greg Elias, the producer, or David, to make some additional comments. But they are ready, willing, and able to go forward on the 25th, if that's your desire, if you're able to meet the commitment. And the reason for that commitment is that they need a full year to work with Live Nation to sign the top talent. They will have to pay 50% the minute they sign a talent. They have to pay 50% non-refundable for that act. And they're ready, willing, and able to do that, as you'll see, a $13 million budget. So with that, I'll turn the program over. And thank you for having us present today.
Nice.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard Jerry state we were prepared full bore for 2024, this coming March, that we are now arming up for, to the teeth, barricades. Our mayor went to the governor of the state of Florida for more soldiers to reinforce what we already have. Is that the PR that we want to go out to the world? This is Miami Beach in March. I grew up on Ocean Drive since 1955. I don't think there's anybody in this room that has the experience of Ocean Drive more than I do. My family was in the hotel business, and so I folded towels as my first job when I was 8 years old. I know Ocean Drive. Goodwood came after we had gotten a 7-0 vote from our commission, gone through this board, and were ready, willing, and able to put, and Greg was putting $13.5 million on the table of his money to do this event for this year. Goodwood came along. They said, we're going to bring 102,000 people. We're going to take 5th to 15th Street, the street, Loomis Park, the soft pack, into the hard pack east of the dune. It's going to, we couldn't get the third, that was the third week. We couldn't get the second week. We couldn't get the first week. We got bounced from the first week because Goodwood needed to set up even in the first week. And then we were asked by the entertainment department, could we take February? The top stars don't begin touring till March 1st. And one of our associates, Live Nation Europe, who books major talent, said we cannot do February. There's nobody on tour. The effort that has gone into this event began by me in Memorial Day weekend in 2004. It was too controversial then for big promoters to get involved. I began this for spring break in 2019. We were approved by 7-0 vote of a commission in 2019, and the pandemic canceled all of that. We were then reapproved for 2024 in 2023 by the commission, and the Goodwood Festival canceled that. The entertainment department asked us if we could take April. Live Nation does the Tortuga, Big Tortuga Festival in Fort Lauderdale in April. And so Live Nation was a no-go for April. We have a situation, as Commissioner Fernandez pointed out. This event, and by the way, I've worked all these years out of the goodness of my heart and civic duty, nothing more, and knowing that my direction was right, first for Memorial Day weekend and now for the third weekend, which is the most difficult weekend of spring break. I have no business, financial, or any other interest in this concert. My only business is Mango's Tropical Cafe. And here I am preparing my staff yesterday at management and staff meetings to close the middle of March if curfew is also levied by the city manager on top of there's no sidewalk cafes. There goes 40% of everyone's Ocean Drive business. And no parking. I have to let my staff know that you have to get through the neck down of traffic on the causeways, get to parking. Please leave 2 hours early, just in case.
Let me interject where I'm at. That pains me to hear. I don't think this March or last March or previous marches are something any of us are proud of. And we're all struggling the way to go here. And what is most confusing is the confliction that we have, right? Which direction do we take it? Do we lock down as much as possible? The scenario you described hurts to hear this Miami Beach. I wanted to move here in March from coming down. I'm sorry, I wanted to move to Miami Beach from visiting our lovely city in March 15 years ago. It was the most glorious time of the year, and it still should be. But we're just so torn into, okay, here's these measures. We're shutting down garages. And then we're saying, well, should next year, should we just go all in and go as big as possible? And these are conversations I want to entertain, and I want to get everybody's input. I think the most constraining factor here is the timing, right? And I don't know how my colleagues feel, but I almost feel as if, what's best is a meeting of all of the a sunshine meeting just for the direction of spring break in 2025, where we invite all stakeholders of the community, where we're not leaving it up to Mr. Wallach to go out and speak to this neighborhood group, this neighborhood group, this neighborhood group. We say, everybody, resident, business, property owner, stakeholders, in 2 weeks, let's get together at the convention center and talk about what spring break 2025 looks like. What vision do we want? Do we want a massive concert where we're essentially saying, okay, that's going to book all the hotel rooms, or do we want to try and continue this message? One of the biggest hesitations I have is the conflicting message we're sending for this year when we start talking about programming for next year. Please.
I think everybody who knows me knows that I'm an enormous music lover. I have a musician in my family, and the more live music, the better, in my view. In addition to the comments you've made, the concern I have is not about should we find a way to make this happen in some iteration. It's we are essentially giving ourselves, by default, a year of new data points by enacting what we've enacted for March Madness starting in a couple of weeks. We have many years of data points that aren't great, so now we are trying the opposite. And I think we would be better served as a city and have a better outcome with whatever festival ends up coming forward to factor the information that we will learn from the results of the actions that this commission has enacted for this year. So I would love to have a conversation with everybody who is involved in this in one room. So the neighborhood, the residents, the business owners, possibly is there a way to even think about this, maybe headquartered on Ocean Drive, but also have satellite opportunities up the Band Shell and at the Fillmore. And think about this as, a music city for a week. I don't know. But that is it's a really intriguing and engaging and exciting opportunity. And my wish would be to do this in a way where we have every possible data point, including what effect or lack thereof this year's measures will have had on the city, so that when we decide, yes, we want to move forward with this in a holistic way that benefits the city and the residents and the visitors and the business owners in the best possible iteration of what could be, we do it in a way where we know and we are convinced that we are putting together the best pieces of all of what we've done and all that will be proposed.
I have heard certain people state, oh, look, it's March. We already have 90% occupancy. That argument is so divergent from A Course to Prosperity, I can't hardly fathom the logic behind it. If there were 25,000 additional requests for rooms 6 months prior to March next year, what would happen to the rates of March? And the following year, if there were 30,000 additional requests for reservations, what would happen? We would be not 90%, we would be 100%. And with whom? The demographic of the concerts in Curacao, which is the concert that would be moving here, is to look around this room and even on the dais, and that is the demographic of the music that would be on stage. I choose a road to prosperity because if they cannot get rooms in the third week of March, they're going to then get rooms in the second week of March or the first week of March, and then all of March begins the road to the highest rates we've ever seen in history. That, to me, is the road to prosperity. What we're on is the road to disaster. This concert, if we can get the likes of Paul McCartney, if we can get Stevie Wonder back here, if we can get Lady Gaga, if we can get Botticelli, we have the ability, because Greg Elias can put millions down where nobody has before.
So David.
We have an opportunity.
So let me ask my colleagues, because, you know, they need to work on this, and this takes time to work on. I have to say, I'm somewhat disappointed because I had for as everyone knows, you know, public input and community engagement is very important for all of us. And I know for specifically for this new city commission, and so I was hoping to for there to be stakeholder input from the ODA, from ADNA, from So Be Safe, and others like Flamingo Park, Washington Avenue and Lincoln Road and South of Fifth. But I just wanted to get from feedback from my colleagues. When are you thinking in terms of when would you feel comfortable having this conversation? Because what I'm hearing from you guys is that you guys don't feel comfortable having this conversation now.
May?
Yeah, please.
You know, I respect the difficulty that it takes to book a concert event of this magnitude, 3+ days, multiple locations, multiple stages, multiple levels of talent. I get it. I've seen them do it at the Bandshell for a much smaller scale and much smaller types of acts, and it's not a job I want. Let's put it that way. So hats off to you because I enjoy it. I don't want to do it. I know you say you need a year. Hypothetically speaking, we have a meeting the first week of April, right? Not a commission meeting, a sunshine meeting with the stakeholders, police, commission, staff, you guys, Ocean Drive, all the neighborhoods, maybe even the Bandshell because they want a piece of it, right? And we sit down and say, what did we learn from the last month? What worked? What didn't work? What do we need? What do we want to dial back on? What did we not anticipate?
Tony, I gotta head out.
So if we have that meeting in the first week of April, does that still give you 10?
No.
11 months.
Let me take the heat, Tanya, off of this whole thing for everyone. The producers only want the best for Miami Beach. Literally, these are fine, fine people, total consummate professionals, and they would only do it at the highest level. If they cannot get a contract by March 29th, and that's what it seems to be, and it's okay.
By when
they're happy to move it to a request for 2026.
Okay. When you say a contract, tell me what you mean by a contract.
They have to lock the dates in order to secure the talent.
With all due respect, does it not does 2 weeks make a difference over the course of 52 weeks? And I would defer to...
They're already pushing it at March 29th.
But, David, wouldn't they want to know...
Let me
ask you a question. Yeah. Wouldn't they want to know, because what my colleagues are mentioning does make sense. Like, I can see from my colleagues' perspectives that who will have to vote on this, wanting to know the outcome of the measures we've implemented this year. Wouldn't Gregory Elias and the people from Live Nation, even the very artists who are approaching to be booked, want to know, you know, what was the outcome of this spring break? And the effectiveness of these measures, which to me tells me, would stand to reason, sacrificing 2 weeks so that we can move forward in a very cohesive way. I think there's you're not hearing a no from this body, but you're hearing we need time so that we can best assess the decisions that were made, so that we can have the most successful possibility possible in 2025.
David, what would be most important for me for timing is true community engagement. Ideally, it would happen after spring break, because I totally agree with what my colleagues are saying. Let's assess what happened this year. I'd be comfortable making a decision one way or another if we had a comprehensive community discussion, because this isn't – yes, we are elected officials, but this is a decision for the entire community.
We're not omnipotent.
Right.
And the thing is – It doesn't take overnight to negotiate this kind of a contract with...
But it doesn't take overnight either for the city commission to take a decision like this as well.
Well, yeah, but that's why I say... We respect it. And believe me, we totally, totally respect that. Even I know I want to see what happens in March as well. We all do. We want to see. But let me also state that we did this exact same thing after the wars in the streets of 2001, 2002, and 2003 with Memorial Day weekend. And we did 14 years of exactly what we're doing, 14 years. And until the Air and Sea Show came along, we didn't make a change. We just had war in the streets and a lot of police. So but we need to do the experiment,
David,
again.
David, I need to
We're going to have to go to 2026. We cannot.
Okay.
We can't risk the quality of the talent. We have to hit a home run for this city. And this team of people...
So for 2025, you're going to need two colleagues. And unfortunately, my colleague, the vice chair, Kristen Rosen Gonzalez, had to leave the meeting. But you're going to need at least, you know, actually to pass anything, what is it, two or three votes of this body?
Right.
You would need 3 votes.
So three votes. The 3 votes to pass this here today, it's not here. If we can wait till April, because that's what I'm hearing from my colleagues, that they're going to feel comfortable with.
We're comfortable with it too, Commissioner Fernandez. We are totally comfortable. The only thing is that apparently Greg is having difficulty getting into the Zoom. I don't know if he's on, but my instruction is we cannot compromise the quality, and we have to have a year to get the top talent.
But I have to tell you, I mean, I haven't produced events on this scale or negotiated with Steven.
I have to step out to take this call. I'm sorry. I've been deferring it for a while now.
Understood.
And I'm trying to get us to a good place.
I'm not trying to squeeze anything.
No,
I'm trying to.
I just don't understand. I understand a full year. We don't want to nobody wants to do anything compromising quality or safety or anything. So if we have a conversation, even if we have it at the end of the last week of March, right, we'll have enough knowledge, presumably, by the end of that last week of March to know how spring break went for us, or the very beginning of the first week of March. That is a week to 10 days difference. I cannot believe that is such a huge difference that it couldn't work for 2025 if the decision was made to do it. I mean, the decision might be made that, you know what, we really want to do it, but we need to do it for 2026. But, like, nobody's ready to pull that trigger until we know more than we know today.
My ask
through the chair, may I just make a clarification?
And that's Chairman? Greg? Or this chair?
Yeah, real quick. I think the difference here of what David is saying, and I'm not sure that we're all understanding the exact same thing. Commissioner Bott, you're right. And a week here or there might not make a difference to just make the firm decision you want to move forward. However, what the producers need to do is have an actual contract. So if in the first week of April, last week of March, the commission says, you know what, we want to go full bore for March of 25 on this festival. By the time the administration negotiates a contract and legal writes it and gets it back to the commission to approve, you're into May or June. It's not going to be like a week or 10 days. He can't sign contracts and spend $500,000 on each one that he puts down money until he has something signed. And the attorney will take a month to write the contract. That's the problem. It's not just a matter of a week.
Thank you, Jerry. And the last thing that I would want to do is essentially say, well, the commission kind of forced an acceleration of the talent that needs to be booked, and that's why 2025 went astray. We didn't have the proper lead time. So the last thing that I want to do is negatively alter your time frame, and then we're scrambling and we don't put our best foot forward.
Exactly.
But in the same regard, I would want to sit there excited if we went this path with my colleagues and sit at that contract signing and say, this is our path out of spring break. And with the uncertainty of what happens just 2 weeks after that contract would be signed, leaves us in a very – we're like, okay, great.
It's not responsible. It just isn't. I mean, I think we all think that there is a possibility, a high possibility to make something really amazing for the city of Miami Beach. And what that version of it may be very different from what you're proposing today, because it might be a city – like, what if we turn this into Music City, right, where we got some – you know, the highest level concerts are on Lummis Park, but there's other stuff going on. We could, if we do this right and get all the stakeholders in a room with the knowledge that we glean from this year's activities and have even more than a year to imagine what could be. Now that is transformative. And I am a big proponent of measure twice and cut once. You've heard me say this before. And I would rather give us all collectively the best opportunity to hit a home run and set the course for the next couple of years or next couple of decades, rather.
Yeah, we're talking 10 years.
Yeah, so. And I said this to a business owner who is concerned about the fact that March 17, he owns an Irish bar in the affected areas. And he's like, oh, St. Patrick's Day, it's going to kill me. I'm like, you know what? It's not, because there's still a bazillion people living and working in Miami Beach who aren't flying in for spring break or for St. Patrick's Day. But wouldn't we collectively rather take a soft March 17th for a year and get an enormous March 17th for the next 20 years? I mean, this is a long-term play, and I want to make sure we give us all collectively the best opportunity to succeed.
We're all on the same page in that. The only thing that I would ask and actually demand is that there's no delays. We continue on this path with, actually, I would, and there's not probably enough votes here for a referral, so it's by natural it is just not going to move forward right now. But every meeting that comes up with the commission and with the finance committee, if it's to be referred back for any reason, I don't want to lose any time. We're going to experience March, and for whatever that is, for good, for worse, we're all going to experience it together on the front lines and know what's what. We're then going to hopefully have a much better March than we had in the past, but what I expect is the same as last year. And so what I do want to do is continue right after March, as you say, into the April meeting, continue it and not put it on a back burner, because the more time that we have in advance, even a year and a half, a year and three quarters to book that talent, that's the best that we can possibly do.
So to that end, and not because of this item, but because of other things that I want to be discussing about spring break, March Madness, I've already requested from the city attorney and the city clerk a sunshine meeting, either the end of the first week of April or the very beginning of the second week of April. We have a commission meeting, I think the third or some ridiculous date, but I want a meeting, a sunshine meeting, dedicated to the topic of spring break, so that we can collectively have the stakeholders involved and have the lessons learned and understand what we want going forward, what worked, what didn't, and how to fix that. And then from there, and this can be part of that conversation, but But I don't want to lose a step. I mean, we've all been saying for the last
year, that's the key.
It was great that we had a commission meeting last year in June or July to address spring break. That was an improvement. We need to have our next spring break meeting in April, after the commission meeting, after the stakeholder meeting, to lessons learned, you know. And then, okay, so how do we want to envision spring break going forward for 2026?
Yeah, you have my commitment to that.
Absolutely.
Rick, anybody on the line? Anybody from the public?
We have Representative Grieco, we have Keith Marks, and Ken Koppel on the Zoom.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Could we admit Representative Grieco, please?
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is the former representative, former commissioner, Mike Grieco. Some will call me the godfather of the Aaron P. Show as well. You're welcome. I'm calling to let you know that I think that this is probably one of the worst ideas I've heard since you guys all got elected in November. David, I love you. Jerry, I love you. I think that this is a terrible idea. When I was on the city commission, I fought back on the Tortuga Festival. I will fight you tooth and nail on this. I know Keith's calling in to tell you the same thing. I'm sure Ken's calling in to tell you the same thing. We are all down here in South Beach. It was bad enough for the boat show. And that's the boat show. And you guys want to consciously bring in a multi-day music festival that would cripple our streets, probably create a public safety nightmare because the fire trucks can't get around. It was bad enough. If you guys remember the centennial, some of you, I don't even know who was here for that, but when we had the centennial, same type of problem, okay? You cannot program your way out of spring break. It is a month-long issue. It is, you cannot compare it to the Aaron C. Show in Memorial Day weekend. That's a specific problem that had a specific solution, and I'm hearing about changing of demographics and everything else. This is not the way to go. I'm saving you the time. And I'm saving you the money and the energy. This really, you should kill this right now, because if you don't, there are hundreds of people that are going to fight you on this. And I appreciate your time. More than happy to have one-on-one conversations with all of you, as I have had with some of you on the dais on this issue. But guys, we don't have the infrastructure. We don't have the topography. We don't have enough streets. We're a tiny little barrier island. We can't be bringing tens of thousands of people here on purpose. We're bad enough having them come here on accident. So thank you again.
How is it that Super Bowl, we all want, and that brings over 100,000 people, no problems, regular policing or a little bit more, but not anything specifically grandiose. And we all want Super Bowl to come back. It's that's a nonsensical argument that Grieco just brought to us. Totally nonsensical.
Go ahead, Rick.
Could we let Mr. Koppel in, please?
Ken, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Yes. Okay. Good afternoon. Ken Koppel for So Be Safe, and thanks for the opportunity to comment. We've detailed in emails to each of you the several reasons the festival is a bad idea at this time. But the summary is simple. One, it would not achieve for spring break what the Air and Sea Show contributed to Memorial Day. As the representative said, these are apples and oranges. Number two, there are numerous issues with process. No consultation, to my knowledge, has been done with the resident community, certainly not with us or anybody I've spoken to. And there are numerous missing categories of information that are necessary to assess costs, implementation challenges, build in and build out. Now, a music festival at another time of year, when the city is not already crowded and hotels full, might make some sense. And another type of activation during March might be helpful. One that drew local area families during the day, like the Air and Sea Show. Other cities have come up with such activations, researching and evaluating concepts that have worked in other cities. And there are several to consider, none of which our city has thought about. That activity is worthwhile and it should be pursued. It is possible that some activations can benefit us without tearing the city apart. But this festival, at this time, does not make sense for the city of Miami Beach certainly not for its residents and its visitors and its businesses. Thank you.
The Food and Wine Festival at this time stretches from 10th Street past 14th Street with no beach access. What's the build-out time on that, a month?
Yes, approximately.
A month of that. This concert would be in and out in half of that time. And I cannot fathom that within 2 years that there would be such a demand. In fact, probably Mr. Koppel would be asking of me if he could get VIP tickets. Because if Botticelli is singing, if McCartney, Lady Gaga, Paul Simon, Stevie Wonder, the top of the top of the top, they had Tony Bennett singing for them. I went to see Burt Bacharach singing for them. If those people are up there singing, who do you think is going to show up by the tens of thousands? That's what we want you to consider for 2026. And also what Ken was bringing up is exactly what you wanted to discuss right after March in a meeting in the beginning of April after we experienced March. I think that as long as we're continuing to move forward, still, Mr. Koppel, Jonathan Plustick, everybody else will still have multiple forums to bring their thoughts forward.
Yeah, and that's what I would like, is just widespread community input.
Would you like to take one more call? Or
without David's rebuttal, but yes.
Yes. Mr. Marks, please admit Mr. Marks.
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, Keith Marks, President Sofna. Love the new board, love all the new commissioners. We're headed toward residents first and sanity. And yet, I agree with Commissioner Joe Magazine. This is schizophrenia on acid. Last year, we were talking about putting fencing up around the area during spring break. This year, with virtually no discussion, you closed all the parking lots. And yet, we have the gentleman who, with good interest, but also very business-oriented interest in Mangoes, because his area is being affected and shut down, wants to put a concert there. This is like my favorite commissioner of the past who just ran out of term, Mr. Areola, trying to bring Ultra to try to fix spring break. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous to be talking about solutions of fixing spring break that bring more people down and a concert, which obviously it's not going to be a bunch of 60-year-olds, that with no idea what's going on this year. So I agree with Joe Magazine. It's schizophrenic. I agree with Tanya. You have no idea what's going on. If you want to talk about this in August and present it to the community, fine. But this heavy-handed commentary that I hear from the owner of Mangoes after leaders of this community, whether it's in Mr. Greco or Mr. Koppel or myself, I'm sure he's going to have comments about this. This is BS. This is ridiculous. And the community is not going to be ordered around and heavy-handed by Mr. Mango. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll let the record reflect, while Mr. Marks agreed with me, I did not use the term schizophrenia on acid. But if you wanted to come up and speak, sir.
Sure. How are you? Good evening. Good afternoon, Commissioner. My name is Damian Pinto. I am the owner and operator of Voice of Dance Music, LLP. It's basically an entertainment company. I've also been privileged to be the host of the largest touring music festival in the world for 26 years, which started actually here on the shores of Miami Beach, 21st and 23rd in Collins. And the same thing was just got too big. We had to move off. But what you have here, in my opinion, is obviously a huge problem, and it's been seemed like been dragging on forever. I'm not telling you anything new. I think what your approach is good, that we address it immediately, and I can give you a little bit more insight on what he was talking about needing the time. When you book these touring agents or these large festivals, it's not like you just book them in a month later, they show up, or 4 months later. Sometimes these people are planning 16, 18, 24 months out of their world tours, so you got to kind of get them 12 months is even a small period of time. So, you know, we've done, the company that I've worked with has done multiple economic impact studies. So much, and the amount of money that is being left on the table by just locking it down and not trying to be proactive towards business, to me, seems insensible. So, you know, I think you guys are on the right path. You got to get the community involved, obviously. But to just say, oh, we don't want to do anything when the Super Bowl's here, when the wine is it just needs to be properly done, like I've heard in this meeting. I mean, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in extra revenues in a 7-day period. Just now that business moved over to downtown now. So, you know, it's just my opinion hearing it. I'm a longtime lover of this city. I've been coming here for 35 years, and that's pretty much it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I make a motion?
Please.
So I would suggest that I think the term is retain this item until May, that we take the lessons learned from March. We convene sunshine meetings in April, early April, to determine what direction we think is best to proceed in with all the relevant stakeholders and come back and revisit this.
Could I make a suggestion?
Please.
Instead of making it a sunshine meeting, because, you know, maybe it's a meeting that would require action, I want to make sure that our mayor is able to participate as well. Maybe a special meeting, request that the mayor consider doing a special meeting in April. Okay. To talk about that.
Okay. So there were two. You were out because we kept you from your phone call. So just
I'm sorry.
No, don't be. I mean, this was longer than we all anticipated. I had already made a request for a sunshine meeting to talk about lessons learned from spring break. Uh-huh. Which hasn't been granted yet, but, you know, sort of the end of the first week of April or the first beginning of the second week of April, right after our commission meeting. And then so that could be sort of a lessons learned with stakeholders, and then there could be a separate actionable meeting, or maybe it gets combined. I don't know, but we
just do that. I think the
just for purposes too. I think Commissioner Magazine, you had mentioned when we were discussing all of our spring break measures, like what's the barometer, how do we know if these were effective or not. And we made a referral to the Public Safety and Neighborhoods Quality of Life Committee, like an after action, to determine like what worked, what didn't work. So this sunshine meeting would be in addition to the after action that we already referred to Public Safety.
Oh, I didn't know there was. That happened on Wednesday?
I think it was Wednesday. I whenever we spoke about the measures that we were implementing, we said let's see how well they were implemented. Were they effective? Did they give the intended outcome?
Yeah, what my intent was, and we can take this offline, but my intent was to have a brainstorming session. So it's not, you know, not a quasi-judicial thing of like everybody sitting together in a room, sharing their experiences, you know, putting paper up on the walls and taking down ideas, you know, the way we used to do in the old days, to try to figure out what worked, what didn't. And so I can happily... You know, we can
whatever you guys want. I just think whatever, you know, in terms of determining what we do for next year, it should probably be a special meeting with the mayor where we can take action rather than a sunshine meeting where really we can't take action or provide direction.
Mr. CFO.
Yes, if I can, for this item, if I'm hearing, is that for the purpose of the business of this committee and this item, is this item was heard and it'll be deferred until the May FERC meeting to return for discussion. Correct?
Yeah.
I appreciate everybody's input, time, and collaboration on this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I look forward to continuing this.